far. So members who for now are not here, we hope that they are on our way to the meeting. Let me first do what I normally do not like to do, to start a meeting with an apology. But I think it is necessary to do it this time. Last week we decided to postpone this meeting from Friday to today due to the fact that some members were to attend a crime release by the minister in Pretoria. We informed members, and I think the department as well. But the meeting appeared on the committee's meeting program to such an extent that we were later informed that some media people were waiting for the meeting at the venue because they believed the meeting was still there. And I think informed them that the meeting had been called off for Friday. And let me apologize for that and promise that it will not happen. We definitely would not want to see people thinking that there is a meeting, whether they are members of parliament, departments, public, media as well. We do not want to see them thinking that there is a meeting and attending when in actual fact the meeting is not there. And therefore we extend our sincere apologies to them in that regard. National Commissioner, the objects of the police service are to prevent, to combat, and to investigate crime. They are to maintain public order, protect and secure the inhabitants of the Republic and their property, and to uphold and enforce law. And this is the reason why we have South African police service in this country. It therefore starts with prevention. So, National Commissioner, whilst we welcome the crime statistics that was announced by the Minister on Thursday, but we should not forget that it is exactly what the South African Police Service is expected to do and why it exists in the first place. It is true that according to that crime statistics, murder has decreased, and indeed we welcome that. What it actually means to some of us is that during the previous financial year, we managed to save the lives of more than 100,000 South Africans. We spared those lives, and it could have been anyone's life, including my life, and that indeed is appreciated. But, National Commissioner, South Africa have people who claim to be responsible citizens. Those they include myself, yourself, and anybody else in this house, but also out there. But the question is, why do we have increase in drunk and driving? As far as I'm concerned, people, I think most of the people that are driving cars are people who earn some living, a salary at the end of the month, and therefore are able to pay the car's installment and so on and so forth. What is therefore worrying is that these people, when they are sober-minded and knowing that they are going to drive, they drink alcohol and get into a car and drive. And I believe that they know for a fact that that is crime. And for us to have this crime, type of crime increasing, whilst we appreciate the fact that it is as a result of police action, but also it means citizens who claim to be responsible in this regard are indeed irresponsible and they continue to commit this crime. I think this is something that we have to be worried about, particularly if we learn that 65% of murders committed in this country are committed amongst the acquaintances, people who know each other, but also who are under the influence of alcohol or drugs or both. is worrying, because it actually means that if we were to increase awareness among the people of this type of crime, we could again reduce murder even further. And therefore, we do appreciate and welcome any downward trends in crime that is committed. And therefore, we say, well done, SAPS, and please keep up this good work. But today's meeting is about SAPS training. And it includes basic training, and of course, post-basic training. Just this year, we visited two SAPS training colleges at this portfolio committee. One was an unannounced visit to Philippi Training College here in Cape Town, and the other one was a Chatsworth Training College in Devon, which of course was an unannounced visit. I must indicate that the Philippi visit was the second of its kind. First, it was the Portfolio Committee on Safety and Security that visited the training college. Then it was the Portfolio Committee. I have personally not worked, because I'm indeed not a police member, but I've not worked with Philippi products. But I believe that they are not good. I believe that they are not disciplined. I believe that they cannot be responsible. This is based on the findings we made when we visited Philippi Training College. It talks to basic things such as cleanliness of the environment in that area. But it also talks to records that should be kept by tutors or lecturers that are theories related. If you just ask for a previous exam paper or a previous test question paper, you just can't get it. You ask it until you leave, having not received it. But if you ask for the memorandum that accompanies the previous test paper or the previous examination paper, you just don't get it. What is worse is that they will give you a curriculum that, for instance, says for this subject, say for instance, professional conduct, 40 credits are allocated, which in the olden days language it will be 40 periods, I want to believe. Then you say, fine, this is the minimum requirement, and show me your timetable that indicates that during 6 months of training you did meet this requirement as per the allocation of credits or periods on your timetable. You don't get that. But when you go to the attendance register to say, indeed, this is the attendance register, show me the relationship between that which is on the curriculum as basic needs, on the timetable as basic needs, and attendance register as basic needs, it's not there. But what the attendance register says is that because their students, when they are in class, they sign the attendance register with or without a lecturer, it indicates that many a times learners will be in class without tutors, because the attendance register will be signed by students, but when you check as what they were doing in class on day so and so, period so and so, there will not be anything that talks to that. When you ask tutors as to what this means, they will say maybe it was visiting lecturers, they will disagree or they will say no, it's not. So what it actually says is that many a times when students are in that college, there will not be classroom teaching. At the same time, the needs or the basic requirements on the curriculum are not met. Like I'm saying, 40 credits, if you check the timetable, those 40 credits, those periods in the olden days language are not reflected. It's not 40 periods that you will count on the timetable. But that will also not be reflected on the attendance register to say, indeed, these are the minimum requirements. These are the 40 credits they were met. It's not there. We left that college being seriously worried, because it talks to the discipline of remember best are those that I was taught at basic training level, than those things that I'm taught at whatever other level. And if we miss it at that stage, we've missed the point. We believe, as some of us in this portfolio committee. But I must indicate that following that, we visited Tuxworth Training College in Durban. It is a complete opposite of Philippi Training College in every way, in terms of cleanliness, in terms of professional conduct and consciousness of the lecturers themselves that are there, their willingness to teach, willingness to change the behavior of those recruits that are there. It tells as they speak, as you meet them. But of course, they also need assistance in as far as issues such as library. They have a library, but it's not well resourced. And as a matter of fact, I don't think they're utilizing it optimally. Both these colleges, they have visions that they can't implement. The vision will, for instance, say, we recruit quality, I'm just citing an example. And when you ask them as to how they are implementing this, then they will say head office is doing it. So they have visions at the college level, visions that they do not implement, that they do not walk towards, because it's not their responsibility. So they don't have visions at their level that they can implement. The vision is set by somebody at national level, and it is sent down to colleges, and it remains a beautiful writing on the wall, which I think they don't even know. As a matter of fact, the sleepy principals did not know the vision of the college, nor the mission of the college, because it doesn't talk to what they are doing at that level. We believe that if we have it right at that level, we'll have it right at whatever other level. If we miss it at that level, we shall have missed the boat, and therefore we are not going to have police being professionalized. And the last thing that I want to comment on, National Commissioner, is the whole issue around the curriculum. We were made to believe during that visit that the curriculum is being reviewed to such an extent now that now your trainees will be they will take a year at college doing theory and so on. But each time we ask those tutors as to how were they involved in the process of reviewal of said curriculum, all of them told us that they were not part. In KZN Chatsworth College, a provincial representative told us that they were involved, they made submissions. But lecturers or tutors themselves, they said they were not. Both in KZN and here in the Western Cape. This is really worrying us because I'm not a lecturer nor a teacher by profession. But I believe that when a curriculum is being reviewed, implementers must be involved so that we do not repeat the same weaknesses of the old curriculum. And I think it is a basic requirement for the renewal of any curriculum that implementers are involved. That implementers are involved so that they can also own the product of that process of renewal of the curriculum. As a matter of fact, they didn't even know as to how they will be implementing that new curriculum and how it will be implemented. This is worrisome. But indeed, we do hope that all these issues that we have raised or will continue to raise will be clarified in this meeting today. there is no police department without policemen who are trained and properly trained. In fact, let me just read some of the issues that we found here in Philippi. The two barracks inspected by the members of the committee, Lisbeth Block A and B, were both in a very poor condition in terms of low levels of maintenance of infrastructure and in terms of the poor degree of cleanliness. While the corridors in front of the rooms were swept and relatively clean, the entrance, landing areas and staircases were filthy and encrusted with dust and dirt. Broken flooring and holes in the ceiling was observed in a number of areas. The bathrooms were extremely dirty. There were rims around the baths. The showers had encrusted cream on the floors and walls, and there were papers and other rubbish lying around and the floors and surfaces areas. One toilet cubicle housed the remains of a dead bed. This is a training college. This is where we socialize our police. This is where we put our R-A-E-O-O, the A-B-C-D-E's, the A-E-I-O-U. This is where we do it. But this is the situation. When they leave that college, what is it that we expect from them? And that is why I started by saying, I believe that the product of this college cannot be good, cannot be responsible, can therefore not be good police constables. That is what I wanted to say as I opened this meeting. And I'm worried that these things must be discovered by the portfolio committee, when in actual fact we have a designated unit at national and I want to believe provincial level on training. And why should it be ourselves who discover these things? But we're not about just that. Today we will be informed by the department as to what exactly does it want or intends to do with regards to training of police constables, particularly because we have been informed that the curriculum is being reviewed. We believe that if we have it right at that level, we'll have it right at whatever level. If we miss it at that point, then we shall have missed everything. Mr. Commissioner, I will allow you to comment and make a presentation. And thank you for sending the document early. Even if members may have not received it on time, but indeed it was inside here that there were delays. But otherwise, we did receive the document from yourself on time, and thank you for that, Honorable Commissioner. Commissioner.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson, and the Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee. Maybe Madam Chair to say who is here from our side. The next to me will be Lieutenant General Standard, the National Deputy Commissioner, who also has to do with the human development and general well-being of the people in that organization and institution. On the other side, it will be Lieutenant General Ngwenya, that will be the Chief Operating Officer and the Office of the National Commissioner. And then there will be Major General Motiba, the site who is an acting commissioner and component head in service training, as we know that the previous head, Lieutenant General Cruiser, has been temporarily shifted to the supply chain management. And then would be Major General Nyalungu, your hand must come here. Nyalungu, that is a component head basic training. And Major General Van Eck, component head curriculum research and development. Did you raise your hand? Okay. Then will be Major General N. Mbekela, component head TD Systems Skills Development and Quality Management. And then will be Brigadier PF Alo, Head Support Service. And then there will be Brigadier V. Nyalunga, Head Management and Leadership. And then Brigadier L. Gosman, Head Curriculum Research and Development. Thank you, Madam Chair. We hope we brought almost everybody to provide answers where it's necessary. Thanks for starting from the beginning about the release of stats. Madam Chair, there's a first point I want to make. The Minister did make that at no stage up to this point that we think we have arrived there when it comes to fighting crime. We have a long, long way to go. As the Minister correctly put it, and we all agree that we have started to walk, but it's a long walk to go. You can't say you have done well when 16,000 people are dead. It doesn't matter from what number they come from, but for the fact that 16,000 people are dead, that tells us that we need to put more and more and more effort. But we do have a feeling that looks like we have started to walk going forward. I don't know whether it has been misunderstood or needs to be reported that way, but the drug-related crimes and deaths, while we want every other figure going down, we do want to see this going up, the drug-related, because it means that police, their actions are uncovering more and more of these deaths of drugs. So, but it's reported as if it's a problem of increasing. Yes, we believe there is increasing, but it's meshed by the activities of the police that we keep finding more and more and more. Maybe what has not been said, Madam Chair, is that especially last financial year, there is a new trend of finding more factories inside the country rather than the final products of drugs. We have dismantled quite several of them. You go there, you think you've seen the farm. The farm has got one horse and two chickens and one pig. It's not the farm. Inside is a factory that is completely assembled and is producing a lot of drugs. Most of that will be in Gauteng, and I think not as much in Natal, where you find farms that are not farms. So that will increase the fines of these drugs, because the police themselves, their activities are going up to work with this matter. I think the worst last finding was 3 weeks back in Kuha, in Eastern Cape, where we found we found the cash of 1.2 billion rand drugs. 1.2 billion, Madam Chair, loaded on these, how do you call these things that they come from the ship?
Containers.
I don't think that we have managed before to find the 1 billion kind of a goal. So, which would have spread in South Africa, and our kids mainly would have found it. So, we are satisfied that police are improving in that much needs to be done, especially intelligence-driven kind of operations will help us to do that. So, well, thanks for the support. We hope we will be working forward and to try as hard as we can as an organization that we never go back to the figures that were there before in terms of the crimes that are hounding South Africa, murder, robbery, car hijack and all, to take it from then forever, continue forward until South Africans themselves, they feel are safe. And they're not told that they're safe, but they should feel that way. Madam Chair, coming to this one that we're here today, I'm sure we will be giving specific answers. Philippi, because we have visited Philippi as this management after receiving, we agree that we should have found these things ourselves. But we have visited Philippi. I'm sure we will give report what have we found and what do we think we need to do about it. Indeed, if it is an entry point and basic, it will have to be the best so that your entry is grand in the South African police. And if you want to go wayward yourself, it's up to you, but you were given the grand entrance. So the explanation you give about the learning institution of the South African police, it doesn't give the grand entrance in the organization. But I'm sure you will be explained what I was trying to put going forward. Not only this institution and other institutions that are there in the Republic of South Africa as South African police. So we will explain as an acting generally how are we trying to take matters forward. As for curriculum, Madam Chair, and involvement of implementers. Maybe we are giving us new debate. Well, fortunately, I'm the teacher by profession. And then I was never involved in the development of curriculum as an implementer. Maybe that's why I'm saying that what you have said, it doesn't mean you can't pick it up and see. But usually people are giving curriculum and they implement it. The only thing we need to do is to train them in the new curriculum and what you expect, which does not necessarily mean that we can't take on board their ideas and they get involved with all the institutions. And surely they will contribute, but the process will be much, much longer when you bring all the educators here to sit down and look at it. But Madam Chair, it's not rejected. It's a new idea, and that we can look at it as we go forward. You raise the issue of the vision. The vision, Madam Chair, is not for the institutions. That would have been derived from the broader vision of the organization. You remember that we're a national organization. And then the vision will have to have a national approach as the South African police. As we work on the vision, the recruitment, I think we have worked towards better delegated kind of recruitment. For instance, the recruitment now will be done at station levels, Madam Chair. Stations will be given their quotas, and then they recruit. But those basics will stay there. Matric, no criminal record, 30 years and younger, healthy, driver's license. Madam Chair, let me say, we are trying to relax on driver's license. There are many good students that we could absorb, but the only snag is a driver's license. We know that from the African communities, driver's license is a hard to achieve. It is, Madam Chair. That's why you find people buying cars and learning how to drive when they go to pension. When you've got your money, you've got the car. At 65, they are learning to drive. So that's what happens with the African community. So we are trying to open, have an opening that the best students, we take that best student, by the time you finish your 2 years, you have the driver's license from part of your training. So that's what we are trying to do. Otherwise, we are missing many good people just for driver's license, which could have been achieved in 2 years coming. So that will take us back on the 2012 achievement of all police then having driver's license with it. But we have sat down and we have said, let's not close the door on good people just for the for the driver's license. So that's that. But the recruitment, Madam Chair, is further taken on much broader understanding. We are trying to involve communities on recruitment. When we say all these have been honored, matric, no criminal record, health, age, and all that, we are working with community structures to be part of looking after our new recruits. For instance, CPFs, churches, former schools, community-based organizations. We will have the opportunity of going to them. Let's say in this police station, we'll recruit these six people. And these six people that in this environment, they are known where they come from. So we must go to the structures there, legislative structures and community structures, to say, your kids here have applied to be members of the South African police. Here they are. Give us something about them. Are we getting best police here, or are we getting worst police? We sure, some will say you've got the best, some will say, ow, die. And it does two things. It's the acceptability, but also anchoring South African police members in communities, to be anchored in communities, become part of them, so that they support. So this recruitment that is coming now is going to be run that way. But this has also changed that it will be a once-off take-in now because they will spend a year in the college. The curriculum has been developed on that understanding that they'll spend a year, Madam Chair, first year. Surely the curriculum will be shared with you, but are those things extended? And then the second year, Madam Chair, pointed that the committee has raised before, we would not throw them at the endless pit by sending them to colleges, to police stations. We'll send them to police stations where they come from, per se, rather than any police station where we can't tell you where they are. We'll send them there. But the training component will strengthen our field
field training with the personnel so that we give them to people in that particular police station, Madam Chair, not just send them, but give them to people. We will keep them there 10 months. This is the second year. We'll keep them 10 months. And then two last months of the year, bring them back to college for assessment with the reports coming from the police station where they have been. To make final touch-ups, where do they need the most assistance, or when they have managed to practicalize the theories that they have had in the first year. We believe we'll get a better trained person, first year theory, second year practice, 2 months to marry that practice and that theory, and then they send that person to the field without allowing them to be thrown alone and not know what happened to them. Because what has been happening, we throw them there for the training and they never come back. We don't know if they have grasped, we don't know if they have improved, we don't know if they have managed to mesh the theory and practice. So give them 2 months for the assessment. So that the curriculum will encapsulate with the part of that going forward, Madam Chair, which we believe will get the better kind of police in terms of community helping us, in terms of ourselves staying longer with them, in terms of ourselves nurturing them in the first 2 years going forward. So that's Madam Chair, that we're trying to look at. But other things that we're trying to look at is when do they join the organization? You will understand that for these first 2 years, they're not members of organization per se. They are not having contract with us, and as such, they are loose. And we have discovered that at the end of first 2 years, we lose quite a big number of them, Madam Chair, because they are not obliged to be part of the South African police. So we are working on putting them on the footing that they do not find it easy to get out of the organization as we finish 2 years with them. And we are trying to work their better package of them staying with us during the training and going forward. We will be finalizing that. We are taking them. We are 5,000 plus beds that we have for next year that will keep them for a year now in the college theory, and then keep them for a year on the field, coming back for last two months to see to them. So that's what we are looking at. There will be shortcomings here and there that presentation we will be doing. There are things, Madam Chair, that we're trying to work on. One of those in the basic training are shooting ranges. I didn't know that it's so expensive to produce the shooting range. They talk of really huge of shooting ranges. And there are colleges where there are no shooting ranges, which gives us a serious challenge of time, where they need to drive 50 kilometers away from the college, single drive, for shooting range of 60 coming back, which it's on our time, but put them in danger of having guns in the cars, driving there, exposing them in the long drivings unnecessarily, and all that. So those are the things that we'll have to look at. We are getting much serious about physical fitness. As they come from college, I'm sure, Madam Chair, you were at the remembrance event in Pretoria. You could see there was no stomach whatsoever on all those people that were seated there. We're all in, Madam Chair, and out, all of them. And one has been asking them, when do you pick this thing, as short as 6 months as you get out? So in the college, yes, but we are saying we must instill that as one discipline, that we stay longer, with it. There is an old rule we are looking at bringing back, Madam Chair, of uniform fitting you for 7 years. If it doesn't fit you, you are sent home to be ready for you to fit it, to fit you. So that will look like you like it. That will give you the uniform, and we say this uniform will stay, this size will stay with you for 7 years. Because usually they miss their sizes in a year. Shouldn't be so. And you stay with it, with your size, and then you go and you come back to after 7 years, maybe get married, and you can move from 32 now to 34. But if you are 32 as you're leaving the college, stay 32 for at least 5 to 7 years. So that I can see you are looking around here, Madam Chair. I can see you are looking around here, Madam Chair. And most of the people that are here, Madam Chair, I think they are staying within their size, except a few. So we'll try to deal with that. But the last point on this one, Madam Chair, we will be forever having a very spongy minds and brains of listening and improving with many other, with ourselves as South Africans, but with other countries. And we have a lot of working relationship, especially when it comes to training with some few countries. France is one of them. And the Americans have come to train on some kind of units and divisions. And we will forever have very open minds, since the policy is very dynamic and very scientific. So we'll forever listen, Madam Chair, and take actions ourselves as the management were supposed to make sure that we perform well. With your permission, Madam Chair, maybe then it will be a presentation so that we can see where we think we are going, and we again, under your tutorship, will know what happens after next. Yes, Mr. General.
Can I just interrupt today? Let me welcome Honorable Swart. I'm sorry I didn't do it at the beginning. He is replacing Honorable Ms. Schaefer. He's from DA. We welcome you to this committee. You'll have to find a way of catching up with our work, but indeed we are one of the priority committees, as you will know. The fighting crime is the priority of this government, and as such we work very hard, and I do believe that you will join this with that enthusiasm that is necessary. We're happy to have you. Would have been very happy to still have Ms. Tifa. She was part of us, but of course we cannot interfere in parties' work, and therefore we do hope that we're going to work with you very well. So you're most welcome. I apologize for not doing it at the beginning of the meeting. In fact, I did not notice. Okay. And I think because of that, it might be necessary that we therefore introduce ourselves. I think they will know me. I'm Cindy Chikunga. I'm the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. And
que Good morning. My name is Mpoelo Swati, a member of this committee, a new member. Thank you very much.
My name is Rudy George, member of this committee.
Morning, everybody. My name is Molaboka and Christina Dube, member of this committee. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Ijuli, a member of this committee. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is George Heto. Thank you, a member of this committee.
Good morning. I'm Kenneth Mishra, a member of this committee.
Hello, I'm Diane Kelly-Barnard.
Good morning. Greg Schneeman, member of this committee.
Good morning. Annelies van Wyk, member of this committee.
Thank you. Next to me, we have the secretary of the committee, she's Zoila Das. It's English-like, and she's not English-like. She's Zola Vice. She's our new secretary. She replaced Jerry. And we also have some NPC, our research. Okay? You can continue.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable members, National Commissioner Kelle, Deputy National Commissioners present. Our presentation will cover, as the General has mentioned, our strategy, basic training as well as field training. We'll also look at broad training provision in terms of both the operational as well as the support environments. In terms of our strategy, we must mention that the Divisional Commissioner...
Madam Chair, we are just presenting behind.
We must mention that the Divisional Commissioner of this division, which is Human Resource Development, and we must mention, Honorable Chair, that we are moving away from our name, which is Division Training, because we believe that we are not doing training, we are developing as well as skilling our personnel. The Divisional Commissioner of this division is the appointed skills development facilitator within the organization, doing that work on behalf of the National Commissioner. And he's responsible for all education, training, and skills development within this organization. And the Divisional Commissioner is part of the collective of senior managers, is part of the management forum, which has been chaired by the National Commissioner. And in terms of the broad education, training, and development, we form part of the human resource value chain, which also touches on the human resource development of government, which has been driven by the Department of Public Service and Administration. We are being regulated by the following environment, which is the Skills Development Act, Skills Development Levies Act, the SAQUA Act, the SAPS Act, the Employment Equity Act, National Skills Development Strategy, as well as Government Human Resource Development Strategy. Our vision, Honorable Chair, is to ensure quality education, training, and development in support of creating, as well as maintaining, a safe and secure environment for all people in South Africa. In terms of our mission, I'll only touch some, a few of them. It is the auditing of skills within the organization, the determining of education, training, and development needs within the subs, research and design and development of outcome-based education, the setting of assurance of ETD quality standards. In terms of our values, and our values as a result of our strategic session of 2008, we decided to adopt certain values which are driving the work that we are doing, and that is summarized by the word STIC, which is service-oriented, teamwork, integrity, commitment, as well as quality. In terms of our training priorities, which was determined in 2004, I must mention that when Lieutenant General Cruiser took over in 2004, he found that training within the organization was being scattered For instance, KwaZulu-Natal would do its own training. Limpopo would do its own training. Certain divisions also do its own training. The first thing he done was to consolidate all training function. The result is that, as I'm speaking to you now, all the training function in terms of policy, in terms of standard, is vested within this division, and the standard is the same all over the country. To ensure training provisioning, which is also done nationally, the development and implementation of learnerships, ensure participation in the then called Lake CETA, which is now called the SACETA, revise and conduct skills audit. In terms of our new strategic direction, which was adopted in 2008, it is proper that we start with the year 2004, when Divisional Commissioner Lieutenant General Kuruza took over. The first phase was to do what we call storming and norming. In terms of the storming and norming, which was part of the priorities just I mentioned earlier, we targeted our market, we set our product range, we determined competencies, and we established culture as well as values. Then we went into 2006, and in 2006, that phase is called the performing. That phase was characterized by customer care and requirements, optimized product, streamlined processes, sound financial practices, people relations practices, leadership management style, and we decided not to be content with the status quo. The result is that when we went to 2007, we realized that we were heading for disaster and we had to change direction to remain current as well as to play our role within the organization. And then we went into the third phase, which is the renewal phase, which was characterized by sanity check for business renewal, established as market leader, new product range, expand upstream or fall, teams to continuously raising the bar, change management and value-based leadership. Out of this 2008 session came our strategy itself. In the heart of the strategy is professional education, training, and development practice. It is supported by an education, training, and development knowledge-based delivery and education, training, and development partnerships, and is underpinned by value-driven teams. Our continuous drive to implement our STIC values in achieving this strategy. Out of this strategic strategy came 8 strategic objectives, which I'll touch on some of them, to establish a knowledge management capability for knowledge assets in accordance with the learning discipline in policy, to establish a coherently managed ETD practitioners capability, to establish ETD centers of excellence that promote innovative research, development, and learning practices that position them as leaders in specific learning disciplines for policy. Out of this objective came 7 key performance areas, and these are the key performance areas that we are presently driving, 2010 until 2030. The first one is to ensure responsive ETD research design and development solutions for policy, to ensure professional ETD practice for policy, to ensure ETD provisioning for policy, to ensure ETD knowledge management for policy. The first KPA, which is to ensure responsive ETD research design and development solutions for policy, is driven by development process for ETD solutions, development of outcome-based learning programs, as well as impact studies. In terms of the number of new learning programs developed by SAF since 2004-2009, there is 68 of them which has been developed. In terms of the process for implementing impact studies, the process is as stated there. I'm not going to detail into it, but it's, we get proposal, there is design impact assessment instruments, and collection of data. We're still going to talk on the impact studies. These are the programs that has been where impact studies have been done. It is a basic training learning program, the middle management program, field training officers learning program, junior management, detective commander statement taking, as well as business writing skills. In terms of to ensure professional ETD practice for policing, it is driven by the learnerships, accreditation, as well as ETD development centers. In terms of the learnerships, there is a learnership that we call OTD-ETD, which is occupationally directed education training and development. This qualification, this duration is 12 months, and it is qualification that is national certificate in ETDP. It is level 5. The next slide is talking to the number of members attending the learnerships in the different learnership environments. Honorable Chair, I'm not going to it. Suffice to say that 1,754 members have attended these learnerships. In terms of the accreditation of training providers, all our basic training learning programs have been fully accredited by the CSETA, and they've been issued what we call the ISOE, which is a title that is given only by the SACITA, which is together with the criteria set by the Department of Labor. 2 management and leadership academies have been accredited, 5 in service training, 1 professional development center, and our own office at head office is also accredited as a training provider. In terms of the provinces, it is still work in progress. Mpumalanga is 1, Limpopo is 1, Northern Cape is 4, and KwaZulu-Natal is 6. And we must mention, Honorable Chair, that the different provinces are having their own training centers. And some of the provinces don't have, unfortunately. We have spoken to the provincial commissioners that they also utilize their budget to create this learning center. In terms of the SAPS ETD Practitioners Development Center, this is the center for the development of all ETD practitioners within the SAPS. It is implementing an NQF-aligned program, that is the ETD Practice Learning Program. It also facilitates assessor and moderator training for all SAPS ETD practitioners. In terms of the total number of assessors and moderators trained by the SAPS, we have trained 1,506 assessors and moderators since the year 2007-2008. In terms of to ensure ETD provision for policy, this is driven by the training data, training resources, skills audit, provisioning plan, as well as the training components. The following slide depicts the national academies. All in all, there are 25, there are 26 if we add our own head office, which is also accredited. There is 10 basic training, and then the next is for the in-service training, the ETD practitioner, as well as the management and leadership. The following depict the academies in terms of the key resources, all of them in terms of the training capacity is 8,346. In terms of sleeping capacity, is 7,640. The gymnasium facility, this slide shows which one got gymnasium, which one not, in terms of the swimming pool, which one have, which one don't have. In terms of the shooting ranges, this is what the National Commissioner was mentioning, that these are the only official shooting ranges that are there in the organization. And all these ranges, they are in the academies of this division. There is no province with a shooting range of its own. The total number of members attending training for financial year, that is 1 April 2004 to the 31st. From 2004-2005 to 2009-2010, Honorable Chair, 827,375 personnel were trained by this division in cooperation with provincial training. That is the graph that is depicting that, and it is very much clear that since 2004-2005, we've been growing from 49,443 to the present, which is 234,835. The following slide depicts now the categorization of the different environments which bring us to that number that I earlier mentioned in terms of the basic training, semester one and two, the lateral entry, management and leadership, operational reservists, as well as support related training. In terms of the development of the training provisioning plan, the objective of the training process is that there is one training provisioning plan for the whole of SAPS, which include setting of national training priorities, national guidelines on planning, optimal utilization of resources, directives and monitoring of training, as well as management information and training. The most important thing here is just to say that our training priorities are aligned with the priorities of the National Commissioner in terms of the SAPS operational plan for this financial year. The result of this is that there are, the one training provision plan is consisting of national nine provincial training plans, 20 divisional plans, then the national coordinated, the basic training, the standard standard training plan, as well as management and leadership. That includes also the research and development in terms of the pilot programs, as well as the trained trainers. In terms of the skills audit process, Honorable Chairperson, this process starts with the analysis of the designated jobs, the determine of job-specific competencies, and I must mention that in terms of the operational environment, all the skills audit has been done. We will be moving into the skills audit process for the support environment. In terms of the implementation of basic training learning program, I must start by talking about Philippi. After the visit by the portfolio committee, our team from management visited Philippi, and when we arrived there, we discussed the report. The commander has been placed under the mentorship of Major General Nyalungu, who is now mentoring the commander. The commander is now being the day-to-day allowance in terms of so that issues, things that has been broken are being fixed, and as well as damages that are there, that this money is utilized. She's also been taken through that process. A plan of action has been developed, and we must also mention that that facility, unlike all other training academies that I either mentioned, 25 of them, Philippi belongs to the provincial government of the Western Cape. It does not belong to us. We are leasing that building. But irrespective of that, Honorable Chairperson, we want to assure this House that the plan that we have put in place is going to turn around that particular institution so that it is going to be on the same standard as the other academies. In terms of the basic training learning model that the National Commissioner earlier alluded to, the program is now 24 months, which is made up of 12 months in the academy as well as 12 months at the workplace. The model is reflected in a context of 24-month period. There's memorandum of agreement that is driving that. And during the first year, the learner is known as a trainee and there's no policing powers or authority. During the second year, the learner is the status of a student and is appointed a member of the South African Police Service with the power and authorities of a police officer. The structure of the basic training learning program, Honorable Chairperson, as I've mentioned, that the duration of the basic training learning program will be 12 months in the academy. There will be 6 months field training, and then the other 6 months will be when the learner will be doing probation in the environment where the learner is going to work, either at the police station. If this learner was recruited by the detective service, the learner will go during the probation to that particular unit. terms of the learning areas, learning area one is orientation to the SAPS, learning area two is the law, three community service center, four crime investigation, five crime prevention, six street survival. In terms of phase one foundational learning area one, it is orientation to the subs, which include professional conduct and performance enhancement process as well as the drill. Learning area two, which is the law, it includes criminal justice system, criminal law, that include general principles of law as well as the common law. Learning area three is the community service center. Learning area, the next one is also continuation of the community service center. Then learning area six is the street survival, and the module deal with firearms, physical fitness, as well as the first aid. Phase two is the practical, as the National Commissioner was saying, that our basic training will also become more practically oriented, and is when we go to learning area four, which is the crime investigation modules, which deals with crime scene management, management of exhibits, victim empowerment. In terms of phase two, practical learning area number five, the module is 12. Module 12 is introduction to crime prevention. Module 13 is community service center. And those modules are being interlinked so that there is integration of this module. The learner must realize that these modules are not separate. They are linked together. I think I must also go into exactly, in terms of this 12-month approach, what has exactly changed. It will suffice to say that we as Division Human Resource Development, we have been requesting that this program be extended to 12 months, and thanks to the National Commissioner that when he took over, immediately the National Commissioner called us and we agreed that this should be 12 months. One of the things that has been increased...
Chairperson, I think we're missing some pages.
I'm just going through them because otherwise we're going to take many hours. I'm ready that we can go through. I'm just going through quickly because we're having this presentation.
I was saying that there are some pages that are talking that are not about...
I'm now on page 46. We are at page 14.
I think he is elaborating, and we don't have what he is talking to. It's just the summary, and that is why also I was actually paging through. Yeah.
Maybe it, because it's the headline and elaboration, maybe it will help that the elaborated version is left, Madam Chair, so that the members can go through the elaboration.
So, Honorable Chairperson, it will suffice that so the basic training, the new one, is 24 months made up of 12 months academy, 12 months workplace. In terms of the in-service training, it is all training provided after basic training, and it includes crime prevention, operational tactical, protection and security services, peacekeeping, detective, criminal record center, crime intelligence, as well as support engineering. There are certain projects that have been implemented by in-service training to speak to the priorities of the National Commissioner, and they include the development of the station commanders, who are the very important people leading our stations, provision of forensic toolkit training to computer forensic investigators, development and establishment of tactical response teams, the adult basic education and training, the K53 driver training, the analyst notebook, which is being funded by SACITA, as well as peacekeeping training. In terms of the station management development, there are 6 modules, and we have decided, as a result of the request from station commanders, also to include computer literacy as well as organizational system literacy. There is also a project on the tactical response teams that has been implemented starting with this financial year, although the response, the TRTs were implemented last year. The tactical response teams project has been implemented to capacitate the clusters to effectively perform medium risk policing operations. The project is designed to equip and develop members to combat crime through intelligence-driven operations and to maintain public order and police, including major events, incidents, disasters, and as well as other policing functions. The K53 driver training project is one of the critical support skills that members need to have in order to effectively and efficiently perform their duties for improved service delivery. In terms of this project, we are now also working with the provinces. That it used to be nationally based, but now the provinces are also training members in driver training. Then there's a project, Chairperson, on the Detective Commanders Learning Program, and the purpose of this program is designed to equip detective commanders with the knowledge and skills to effectively manage all aspects of detective units. The target group is all the detective and unit commanders. In terms of the detective commanders, the module includes all those operational as well as generic management aspects that need to be addressed, including communication, project approach to crime investigation, as well as traps and undercover operations. In terms of management and leadership, we are having the basic management program chair that is for our junior members, constables, sergeants, warrant officers, junior management program, which is for warrant officers and captains, the middle management learning program, which is for our colonels, as well as the executive development program, which is for our brigadiers as well as generals. And in terms of the approach that we take, our position is that the junior managers need to be taught more about the working of the organization, what we call the internal administrative efficiency, and less of the generic management principles. The executive development program is there to teach 20%, which is internal administrative efficiency, and 80% is the generic management principles. A total number of members attending management and leadership courses since 2004 to 2010, it is 23,792. We must also mention, Honorable Chairperson, that we also include within our courses, management and leadership courses, mentoring as well as coaching, so that the managers must identify those members that are lagging behind and take them under the shoulder, under the arms, mentor them, and as well as to coach them. In terms of to ensure purposeful ETD partnerships for policing, Chairperson, the purpose there is to develop purposeful relationships with relevant partners who will support our vision of a professional practice for education, training, and development in the subs. We are having a partnership with teachery institutions, and the purpose is to align learning programs to qualifications and to institutionalize needs-driven qualifications, e.g., bachelor in policing practice. The most important example is the partnership we are having with Southern Business School. We met with them and we told them exactly what we were looking at, and they developed a qualification which is speaking to the needs of the South African Police Service. We also we are in partnership with UNISA as well as Nelson Mandela University and those other colleges and universities, Durban Technology University. We are also in partnership, Honorable Chairperson, with government departments, Department of Transport, Education, Intelligence, Social Development, the Defense Force, as well as the CITAS, as well as the Statistics South Africa. In terms of to ensure an adequate and optimally utilized resource establishment for ETD practice, This is driven by training resources, budget utilization, development of training database. In terms of the total expenditure per financial year from 2004-2005 to 2009-2010, we must mention that we started in 2004-2005 with a budget of about 260 million, and by the end of the past financial year, our budget was 479,371,000. And the budget allocation, as per this slide, Honorable Chairperson, the big budget is allocated to our running cost, and then there's budget allocation for the basic training learning program, for the training interventions, as well as the other projects that I previously alluded to that always speak to the priorities of the National Commissioner. That is all, and I thank you.
Thank you very, very much for the presentation. We are going to invite questions from members, and we will allow you to respond to that question. The intention is to hold the department accountable. This is what they are paid for. And we will definitely ask questions. And therefore, let me take an Honorable Timothy George, Honorable Swart, Honorable Gray, Honorable Angie, Honorable Kheto, Honorable Reverend Mishe, Honorable Kola Banat, Honorable Schneeman, Honorable but
I've got two questions, but the first one is I must welcome the change for on the issue of driver's license. But it's very, very interesting. These are the arguments we should put against them as the committee. The same arguments which they are now bringing. Fortunately, Commissioner Stander was there. They argued against the same. We argued very strongly, and we even said the issue of poor communities, people who only sometimes have access to a vehicle at a very late stage. And we put all the arguments, the commissioner, and they were so excited, no, this is out time. So, but now that they realize, I must say, we welcome it. But my only question on that, are they going to include driving as part of training? And if they are going to include driving as part of training, how long are they going to allow them to drive vehicles after the training? Because sometimes if somebody's just obtained a driver's license, that person is not perfect enough to be able to drive. That's why even if you go to hire a company to hire a car, the first thing they ask, how many years have you been driving? I'm asking this question because it will have to do with the accident. If you look at most of our vehicles, you now find half of them are already there. And you look at them, they are new, but they are already broken. And they're driven by people who got licenses again. So that's why I'm asking if they're going to teach them, how long they're going to allow them to drive before they are sure that they can get onto the road. The second one, the gentleman said they visited Philippe, which is very good, but he said something which I don't know if he was making an excuse for the place to be what it was. Said, no, it belongs to the provincial government. That's why I would have been interested if they leave any property. I'm not talking, you know, who is responsible to make sure that property is clean and so on, because the way he talked, he said, if he said, then it belongs to the provincial government. So what does that mean? Because all to me depends. What are the terms of the lease?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much for the general for the very good presentation that you presented before us. I've got three questions to ask. My first question is with regard to the physical fitness. I was listening to the radio this morning, and I've heard that the SAPS is actually going to work with Fiji Active, but when I look into this partnership with other entities, I actually don't see. I just want to find out whether that partnership you have signed an agreement, or you're still contemplating working with Vision Active. So I just want to find clarity with regard to that. And the second one is with regard to the shooting range. It is actually indicated in this report that the shooting range are actually not enough. Sometimes we have to travel a long distance to take police officers to go there to train. So I just want to find out how many actually are you trying to actually to minimize that if you have that shortage. And the third one is with regard to the losing of trainees, those who are in probation. It was actually mentioned that when you actually train people, when you put some in on probation, you're losing some. I just want to find out how many are you losing before you can actually make that intake, the permanent ones that you actually take, because you said that you want to actually to solve that problem of losing those people you have trained, because they don't have a contract with you. So I just want to know how many are you losing so that we can know exactly what is actually going on. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. My question is, if people go on training, it's not everybody who succeeds. Do we have students who fail, or do we have students who just say, because I'm in the wrong field, before I even complete my training, then they just disappear? The second question is related to what the Honourable has asked about the building. Who is supposed to maintain the building if we lease it? And then do we maybe have a chance of buying it so that it can belong to us? The third question is around detectives. Have we started training our detectives? And if yes, how do we train them? Do we just say it's a workshop, we make a bulk presentation? Do we know that they are grasping? How do we think that we can improve on them? And how long do they take? Do we take to train them? I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you for the report. Mine is on the gymnasium. Having gymnasiums and utilizing gymnasiums are two different things. We visited Philippi and we found out that the gymnasium, was it Philippi?
Yeah.
Where the gymnasium was never used. We got different answers, but it was clear that it was never used. That is why I'm saying, having it and utilizing it are two different things. And on the part of the recruits finishing their training at the police station, apart from the written reports that you receive from the commander, is there another way of checking on the activities of these recruits? Why I'm asking that is, some 2 months ago, I visited a police station, Duwe police station in Winterfeld. I was shocked. I found the experience basking in the sun, a big group. And when I wanted to know what's happening, I was told, they actually told me they sit like that on daily basis. So my question, that is why my question is, apart from the written reports that you get from the commanders about the recruits' performances, do you have another way of double checking if they are really doing what they've been told to do? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Let me welcome the presentation. And actually, say I'm excited that your recruitment involves the community at police station, and also that you have relaxed the need for driver's license. That is very, very good. That will see progress. And my last clarity-seeking question is your involvement with the Education Department, Commissioner General. Partnership of Education. I think it would help us a lot if we can educate our kids at that early age, why it is important not to drive without licenses. And I think your involvement with education should be entertaining that. I just want to know what is your involvement with Education Department. Thanks.
Chairperson, thank you. I want to ask three questions. The first one on the recruitment of new intakes at station level. When we went to Philippi Training College, we were told that there are people with criminal records. Mm-hmm. Now, I want to know how can people miss the screening if there is a screening. Mm-hmm. But people with criminal records can train as police. Could this be one of the reasons why there is so much corruption among the police, that criminals have been trained from the beginning? Why are you not able to pick up people with criminal records? And secondly, the command at the college, we're told, is receiving mentoring, and that there will be a turnaround to what is happening currently. I want to know whether there is a deadline, and when is that turnaround going to take place? Specifically, whether the buildings that need attention have been repaired, and whether there is improvement in cleanliness in that place, because the place was shocking. So I want to know, if we go there next week, for example, will we find the place different from what it was when we were there? And thirdly, a few things have been said about partnerships with different people. Now, I want to ask a question about partnerships between police in different areas in the same province. And I'm basing my question on the report that was in the South, that the police from South Gauteng, South Johannesburg, who were chasing people who were involved in drugs, actually very drugs, went into Hebrew. They followed them into Hebrew, and those police were arrested by Hebrew police because they did not inform them that they were coming in there. Now, if a police is chasing a criminal from one area to the other, are they not allowed just to get into the area to catch the criminal? Should they stop and say, because now I'm entering a new area, I must phone and inform the police station that I'm coming? I mean, to me, this sounds terrible and obviously unacceptable, because the police have to cooperate regardless of where they are. They have to cooperate to make sure that drug dealers and criminals are apprehended. Now, to hear a report that police have been arrested for venturing into Hillbrook without permission, obviously, I need to know whether is that the kind of training that they are receiving, or whether those police who did that made a mistake. I need clarity on that. This partnership does not allow police in one area to cooperate with police in a different area if they are after criminals. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm interested in the driver's license issue. I don't know what it's down to. It used to be about 11,000 SAPS members without driver's licenses. That came down to 8,000. I don't know what the latest figure is, but it was chipping away at that. If you have that latest figure, but what will happen? And I'm sure you've got this in your regulation somewhere. But what will happen if you allow a student in who doesn't have a license, and you give them the 2 years, and they can't get a license? Are they then dismissed? What is the situation? I don't know that there's not going to be some sort of labor issue there. And this business of the fat cops. I was told at a previous visit some years back at the Pretoria Training College that the regulations in this regard have been done away with, and I must quote here, and that was because of a decision by the unions that SAPS had no right to determine issues of weight. Now, I found that absolutely extraordinary. I mean, as far as I was concerned, I always believed there were regulations. If you were this height, you were allowed to weigh between this and this, because fat people can't run after criminals. I mean, it's the most obvious thing in the world. But apparently the unions had taken great umbrage at this, and those regulations they couldn't be produced. They were scrapped. So now what I'm hearing is very positive from my perspective. Now, this decision of yours, that members must use the same uniform for 7 years, so they're not allowed to, same size uniform, not the same uniform, same size uniform for 7 years. Is this something that you would even consider running past the unions, or have the unions lost the sort of clout that they seem to have had previously within the SAPS, so they could determine issues like this, which I don't actually personally believe they had a right to determine. And I might have missed it, but I saw no reference in the presentation to training for reservists and training for example, heads or members of CPS. I know those are issues that are raised constantly with me, so I'd be interested to hear what the moves are there. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. In the presentation, it was mentioned that the training period is changing. My understanding is that up until recently, if not still the practice, it's been 6 months. So what I'd like to just get an understanding is, when are we implementing this new training period? I may have missed it in the presentation. It may be already in implementation. But then my other question linked there with that would be, you know, one of the experiences that one has is when you go to police stations, and when as a portfolio committee we've gone to police stations, we've generally found that the very basic procedures are just not adhered to. That tells me that there was something drastically wrong with expecting to have a police officer competently trained within 6 months. And I'm glad that the National Commissioner has intervened here and extended this period of training. And obviously, in the years to come, we hopefully will see the benefits. But how do we intend to catch up there with all of these thousands of policemen and women who received this crash course in policing? How are we going to catch that up? Because our experiences, not all, but many police officers are not well trained, and certainly don't adhere. So that's the first question. That's my first two questions, really. I want to just talk about the Philippi Training College, if I may. That's obviously, the chairperson was saying, that's a college, together with other training colleges, where we send our recruits to be trained as policemen and women, who we are expecting to intensify the fight against crime. But you have, at that college, maybe at other colleges, you have senior management based at those training colleges who themselves cannot implement what they're expected to implement. How on earth do we then expect young men and women to actually adhere to what they're told when they see their seniors who just have a careless attitude? The comments were made about the Philippi police station. You didn't really tell us what you saw there, but I can tell you the day that we were there, it was a disgrace. if it was up to me, I would have closed that college immediately and put maybe the whole lot on suspension, because really there was just nothing being adhered to. And when you try to intervene and to talk to commanders of platoons, if you call them, they had such wishy-washy excuses for us. Actually told us that they had inspected bathrooms and they were clean. And when we took them upstairs with us, they didn't know what to say. So the question I'm saying is, are we sure that the people providing the training are the correct people? Because if we don't have the correct people, let's not expect young policemen and women who want to contribute to the safety of our country to come out well trained. So it's a comment I'm making, and it's a question I'm asking as well. My last question I want to ask Jefferson. Here at Parliament, we on a daily basis interact with policemen and women who are based here at Parliament. And certainly we have to say that we acknowledge the work that they do. But I must say that at times you actually wonder where they've actually received their training. And I'm sorry to say it, I don't want to coach all police officers who are based here at Parliament and the parliamentary villages. I would hate to paint them with all the same coat of paint, but many of them are slack. There's no discipline. The attitude is disgraceful, the way they speak to people. You find them sleeping at night. I have often found police officers fast asleep here at Parliament, at the main gates. My understanding in the previous Defence Force, if you're caught sleeping, it was a court-martialable offence. You're in serious trouble. Yeah, nothing seems to happen. And I think why I'm raising this point, it's not about the institution of Parliament, but I'm raising it because it's our daily experience of what we see as supposed training and discipline. And certainly, I think in the member eyes of the public as well, you would see you'd get the impression that you have a police force that is not well trained, not well disciplined. I'm not saying all, but I'm saying this is the experience we have. And I think that we need to be looking at all of these things. And this is our experience here on a daily basis, often at police stations. Thanks, Jefferson.
Thank you, Jim. The presentation is good in terms of telling us the way forward, because that's what it's basically doing. It's indicating to us how things are going to be get done. But it doesn't reflect on what the situation was up to now. I think that is part of the problem. And while I also welcome the fact that we're moving back to a full year of basic training, I think it definitely would assist. My question is complementing that of Mr. Schneerman, in terms of the Honourable Schneerman, in terms of do we evaluate at times our trainers? Do we evaluate our curriculum? Because the fact of the matter is that we get to stations, and I mean, we don't have to tell you this, you know that statement taking is a problem. A basic thing like statement taking by constables that just come out of college is a problem. It's a problem with constables who have been there for 3 years, 4 years. It's a problem with sergeants. It's a problem with whomever. Statement taking is for instance. But also then in terms of detective training. You know, we create the impression that we increase our detective numbers. And it's true, we do increase our detective numbers. But we also know that the number of detectives who are currently operating as detectives, there's a huge number of them that haven't undergone any detective training up to this point in time. And this, I'm not thumbsucking this, we can give to you in terms of station by station that we've been to, where the people say that they've come out of the training college, they're now detectives, but they haven't done one single basic detective, not even basic detective training at that point. One also worries sometimes about, and it comes back to my first question about, you know, do we evaluate our curriculum? Do we evaluate the way in which we teach? And do we evaluate our trainers? Because you wonder sometimes when you get to stations and you see station commanders and the way that station commanders operate. First of all, how they've been selected to become station commanders. And secondly, what training did they undergo. Mm-hmm. And sometimes these are station commanders that actually underwent all the training that is there for managers and for station commanders, but they don't act like that. The station tells you a different story.
Yeah.
So I think we need to evaluate also the effectiveness of what we are training. But also, Commissioner, I believe strongly that a lot of what we're saying and what we are experiencing is about recruitment, but once we've recruited, about promotion. How do we determine who's going to be in that position as a commander? You might put a person as a station commander who actually just want to be a detective, who don't want to be a station commander. But that's his only way of getting, or her only way of getting promotion, of getting a better salary, is to become a manager. But they don't want to be a manager. They want to be a police officer. They want to be a detective, et cetera, et cetera. On retraining, I'm also interested in that matter. Yourself have been on record saying that we need retraining and that you would like to see even some of your senior managers and senior police officers going back for retraining. And I agree with you fully. But I also believe that if you take, for instance, the Philippi example, and what upsets me, Commissioner, and it would be very interesting for yourself to have a look at that, because, again, your national management is aware of this. They were there when the previous visit to Philippi, not this one, the previous one, about 2-3 years ago, took place, and the findings was exactly the same. Exactly the same. Same commander in charge of the training college. What we found there on this day, on our last visit, we found exactly the same previously. It just degenerated further in terms of the collapse of the building, the dirt and the ground. I remember the previous time we were there and we were asking about rubbish on the grounds, like papers lying around, chips, papers, etc., etc. We were told it's Mother Nature. I promise you. We were told it's Mother Nature. And that was the comments by instructors or platoon commanders in that area. Now, that is a reason for ill discipline, I believe, as well. And what makes it worse is that you go to stations and you ask people and they will tell you, station commanders will tell you, we've got a problem with people who graduated from the Philippi Training College. They will tell you that. So how are we going to retrain also where we've got serious problems where we know, for instance, that there's been a gap in terms of a college, of a commander, I almost want to say an institutional problem, because this is what this, in fact, is, if we refer to Philippi. So just in terms of that, I think that's the main question. And then I would also be interested to find out in terms of detective training, because we've heard some horror stories about detective training. For instance, that it consists out of some of the curriculums they told, crime scene investigators are told to watch CSI. They're given programs and say watch CSI, and that's what they do. Now, we would just like to, get some clarity on that as well.
Yes, thank you very much, members. Yes. What has changed? What is informing that decision? We're talking about training here, and therefore we definitely have subjects, we have the curriculum, and so what has changed? Is it a matter of periods, maybe? Is it a matter of subjects that have been added? What has changed? What is informing that? What will they be doing within a year, which they were able to do within 6 months? What is it that they will be doing now for the other 6 months? I just want to get clarity on that one. Mr. Commissioner, I think one other challenge, which I'm not sure whether we'll be able to overcome, is the issue of integration of theory and practice in the training of our subs. I think I did understand the National Commissioner saying after the second year, for 2 months, they will go back to college. But there is complete disintegration of training. What our trainees do in the clinical area, in the police station there, the college has no influence whatsoever. As a matter of fact, they don't even know as to what they are doing. If you ask for the workbook
from the tutor for the learners that are at the police station at the time. They don't have that. So there is absolutely no relationship from the people that are training. They are completely handed over to the service people whose interest is service needs. This is why, National Commissioner, I listened carefully again when you were saying they will go back to the police stations where from where they were recruited. And this to me says, those that are recruited from Singa, for instance, which I wish they are recruited from Singa, they will go back to Singa police station. And I don't know as to what they will be learning there during that 2 years or 10 months for that matter. I just don't know. And I'm asking this question because Groteskier is an academic hospital responsible for the training of doctors by Western Cape University or Medical School. Those doctors cannot go to a hospital, I'm just mentioning names, I don't know Western Cape. They cannot go to Karoo Hospital because it does not meet the requirements for their training. But according to police, from what you are saying, they can go to Mzinga as long as they come from Mzinga. They can go to Mayflower then, as long as they come from there. To learn what is not an issue. I that is my problem, to say, is it not possible for police to identify hospitals that are suitable, not hospitals, I'm sorry, police stations that are suitable, that meet the requirements for training, and from time to time inspect those if they are still or they continue to be suitable for training. 5,000, I'm making an example. You have big police stations, because I think personally we're using our trainees to address service needs when they are still on training. I think that is a challenge. I think the reason why this is happening is because even people who are, for now, who are allocating them for their clinical learning, for their practical learning, are service people, not trainers, not those that are responsible for training, who will emphasize on training needs than service needs. I don't know. This is happening with police. And I think it's something that we can overcome. There is nothing a trainee who is today as they were when I was at Mzinga is learning at Mzinga at all. So it's just a nice day there. And that's it. But a trainee who, for instance, is at Witbank, I'm making an example, is learning. So their training, when they complete the same course, but their training is not the same. It will be worse if the theory, she got her theory, or he got her theory from Philippi and went to Mzinga police station for practical. That is not a police. In actual fact, it doesn't matter as to whether she graduates, but will not be a policeman in the true sense of the word. That is my worry, that this lack of integration between theory and practice. Those that are at the college will not even know as to where trainee X is during clinical allocation. They don't know because they are not deploying them to any. It doesn't matter whether they know so and so is so weak. They will go anywhere. But you also get that there isn't even any feedback that is given by trainees to service people. So that you will know that Cindy, when she completes, but she's good in one, and therefore if she can pursue, say for instance, detective as a course, because we think we've identified that in her. There isn't this feedback mechanism, and which talks to the question which has been asked, I think, by two members, the issue of evaluation of the curriculum itself, but training as such. How are we evaluating our training as such the curriculum? I fully agree, National Commissioner, that it does happen sometimes that you implement a curriculum that you did not have input on when it was being developed. But it is also a fact that curriculum can act on its own, can be a course. It has processes that must be followed and that must be met when the curriculum is being developed or designed. It will depend on what concept you use. It will have to meet those principles. Equally, the renewal of the curriculum must meet some principles, and one of them will be feedback from the implementers, because you're reviewing now. The curriculum is there, and it has been implemented. People implemented that curriculum so that you don't repeat the same mistakes. For instance, if you check the curriculum on, is it professional conduct, is the subject, it could be anything, professional, whatever. In it, there are sections of the SAPS Act. Sections, not the SAPS Act. Sections of the SAPS Act. I take it that any policeman who completes training knows Police Act from Chapter 1, from definitions, from objectives, up to the last section. I take it that way, because that is the act that controls their practice. Is it possible that you're still going to have some sections of that act in this new curriculum? I'm just asking an example. But when you visit the training colleges, they will tell you that they think this is a shortcoming. They will tell you that. And you actually ask them, what else is in your professional conduct? Things that you expect to be part of the ethical conduct of a policeman, you find that they are not there. They know these things. They are mentioning them. But they are not involved in the reviewer. And actually, I'm saying the process of curriculum reviewer itself, it is a process with principles to adhere to. One of them is feedback from the implementers of that curriculum. It's in books everywhere, because there are books on curriculum development. I've not studied those. I'm not a teacher. But I'm just saying it, because we can't continue to repeat one and the same mistakes. Somewhere they've got to be corrected. Yeah. And in fact, I think one of the questions which I also wanted to ask is, is with regards to how are you evaluating police stations if they are suitable for training? I'm asking these questions really because at Mtubatuba they are training police stations. But equally, Mayflower, there are no police cells. We asked just what is the criteria for a particular police station to be a training facility. We're told one of that will be the presence of police cells. Not police cells, but they were trainees who are just, like Grace is saying, sitting there and doing absolutely nothing, or doing things that are far beyond what you'd expect from a trainee to do. These are the issues that we are worried about. And for me, it all goes back to one thing, the integration of the two. any other training, the one I know is training for doctors, training for nurses. If you hand over their allocation to service people, they will address service needs. And that is why most often than not, the allocation will be done by lecturers or trainers or tutors, because they have training interest in whoever. I'm just worried really as to whether we are going to go to Mzinga and find a trainee again, as it is happening today, because they come from Mzinga. Mm-hmm. And how are you going to ensure that they don't go to Mzinga is it possible that we can identify police stations that are suitable for training of police? There are so many of them, 1,117 and 18 today. You can, it's so easy. So that when they complete, all together, all of us together, we can be sure that at least we have a product that we think knows what to do. So that even if they go to the Bundu area, to the rural areas, to where you have the, who is Khadeles of this world, Msinga, and the Mkizes, and the Grunewald of whatever, but at least they know what is correct. Because it becomes a problem when they go to a police station where they, nothing is happening, and they also don't know as to whether they should be doing something. I was listening, really, I'm interested in your curriculum, because this time I think, I don't know, in our very basic training, he referred to it as post-basic training, I don't know, or in-service training. But even if it is at elementary level, some principles of management, you refer to them as generic management principles at that level. Because you have somebody who completes, goes to the police station, does not know that other people that are there and other learners who are junior to him or her need to be managed, or they need to be managed. They don't know. They will get that as a post-basic training. Post-basic training, when they've completed. And unfortunately, one of the characteristics, I would only say this because I like it, I learned it from support. One of the characteristics of adult learners is that they choose to learn. They will learn what they want to learn, and they will not learn what they think is not important to them. So if they think that it's post-basic, I've written my examination, I've qualified, I'm a policeman now, and here they are talking about management, I'm not going to manage anybody. It doesn't matter what you say, but at basic level, they learn everything. And that is where, for me, the curriculum should be richer than at post-basic level. Because there they are adult learners, unlike at a basic level, I mean basic training level. I'm just saying it really out of the experience. Ask any of the members here, and I will tell you, this scholar, but I will tell you things that she knows better, the things that she learned at, if it is a degree level, junior degree level. The rest she chooses to learn it, and if it's not going to assist her, she sits in the house, she listens to the debate. If she thinks that, she switches off her mind, she does something else. That is an adult learner. And that is why, for me, it counts very much as to what we do at the basic level. For me, it counts. That's not
commissioner. Apologies. Chair, just may I ask one additional figure which came out of something that you said a moment ago. Could you also just tell us about quality control? Are standard exams for each of the courses written nationwide because of you raising that some areas seem the training seems to be better or worse than others? So standard exams written by these members of yours, and then what percentage is considered to be a pass for these exams? Or are we just pushing people through without passing? I think we need to determine that. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'm just, I don't know for the rest of us, but for me, asking the company, like,
a comfort break has been requested, and there is tea outside. We can have, I think that we can have tea. Let's come back here at 10 to 12.
Yeah, I'm going to do it.
But in Germany soon the rainy season will start and then the cold hits. And I said, don't pack your winter stuff away just yet. Wait for it. It will catch you.
I don't know. I am Kalas. We will be starting soon. Just a minute, we'll be starting.
very much. We are back. We have questions. Let's have questions.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, we'll really spread this question to all of us. Let me not be accused of philosophizing and theorizing. Madam Chair, there would be some issues on overall philosophical questions that were asked. It's true, the fact that you would join South African police if nothing else you can do. It's true. It has been so. If you can't go here, you can't go there, people ask, why don't you try the police? We have been a Zama-Zama organization. It's just true. Now, if you get those that they fail anywhere, what do you get? Besides, because the South African police are recruited from the South African society and community. If we say, what is the situation and issue of the education in the Republic of South Africa at the present moment? I don't want to enter there. But you don't get the cream of what you complain about. You get the worst of that. Because that has been the main question, Madam Chair. If you can't do anything, why don't you try the police? And we have been a Zama-Zama organization. That's one. But two, by look of things, we have not been big on quality. We have been big on quantity. Mm-hmm. We have been big on quantity, Madam Chair. If you think that in the year 2003, there were 131,000 South African police, 560. This financial year, ending 11th, we have to be 195, is about 65,000 growth in 9 years. That's a huge number. People that are supposed to be trained and go through and allowed to grow and be nurtured. People have been thrown in because we have been chasing the figures rather than the quality. Now, where do we start? Now, there is no time in here. There is no time in. It's time in. Let's main and then deal with these matters because the policing must continue. So we are fixing the flight, the aeroplane that is on flight. Yes. See fixing the ESA. So it will give you more dangers. It will take more risk. It will take longer time rather than packing it and fixing it. So we can't pack South African police and say, all of us that who came to here because we nothing else, can we go home now? And then get everybody who wants to come now. We can't get that luxury, Madam Chair. So when to Mpumalanga, Madam Chair, I spoke to this school about people have science and math joining South Africa. They laughed at me. Students at Maibuye High School. They laughed at me, Madam Chair, when I said, those that have science and math. I said, what do people math and science do in the police? They literally laughed at the whole school, laughed at me, because I spoke about people having science and math joining the South African police. That's how people still look at it. That if you're math and science, you can't join the South African police. I don't know who they think we are working on forensic in laboratories, who pilots and all. So these are the matters, Madam Chair, that will take long for us to go forward and say, let's move from quantity to quality. And that is not, is a basic for, is a societal issue. But we'll try and start somewhere, Madam Chair. And starting cannot be perfect. I'm sure we'll all agree on that.
starting cannot be perfect, but moving forward, sitting here, listening and listening to other people, inviting people, will be perfecting our way going forward. One thing that we have tried to do, Madam Chair, one big issue in the South African Police Service is the statement taking. It's a big issue. The prosecutors will complain, the magistrates will lambast us to say, yeah, because you didn't, that's why people get bail. So it is one issue. So we are trying to fix it. We have raised it before, Madam Chair. It is. We have gone for audit within the South African Police for those people that are legally trained. I think there are about 127 in the whole organization. Some of them are somewhere in the station where it's got nothing to do. We need to place those people where they'll be relevantly used. So that's what we're doing. But Madam Chair, we have advertised the recruitment of low qualified people to come and help us on statement taking and guiding our cases. So that as the police continue, we say, yes, the statement will see the light of the day and all. That's one thing. I think we have advertised about 300 now to bring those people in the level of statement taking, but develop cases so that they don't get bored if the day there is no statement taking, then they sit and all that kind of stuff. Which changes the quality. Because if you take a law student, the person who is legally qualified, and you put, they are not going to give exactly the money for constable for a legally qualified person. So we have started doing that, Madam Chair. But training, well, the big lot of training that is taking place now are reservists. Maybe it goes also to the question of Madam Kolapanati. This is a big chunk of people that are trained at the present moment are reservists. Those that were part of marching and all, sit down, were agreed on criteria and all that. I think the college, main college, about 1,000 of them are reservists taken from there. We have further eased the conditions, Madam Chair. We have further eased the conditions of them being trained. One main I know is an age. We have moved up to 40. Now, if you train a police officer for 40 years, if you train a police officer for 40 years, I don't know who will chase when all criminals are 18 and 22. So you are training your 40. But it has been agreed upon. So we are doing it. That's one. Other one that we are easing is some form of education, academic education, that all of them cannot be matric. So, again, we have this gap of dealing with quantity. And that has been negotiated, it has been agreed that they need to be taken as we are going forward. So it is going to give us a little bit longer time for closing on questions of quality. Madam Chair, we think running, it would be folly for us to say we can adopt and listen to new ideas. One new idea that you have raised are the educational police stations. That's a new idea that you have come. We had a reason why back to their police station. One question that was raised is the feedback. There was no feedback, Madam Chair. It's a new thing. They were just thrown at the police stations and you never see them again. That's what has been happening. They'll go to the police station, they passed on the sign and all that. Sometimes they are promoted when they've gone through and all. It's a new thing, this of inviting them back with the report and sitting down with them for two months, working on some other assessments, if indeed it has happened. It's a new thing altogether. It has not been there. Now, this unit agrees, Madam Chair, that we'll have to emphasize and put the onus on provinces without checking that these people must be given to people. They should not be thrown to stations. People will be part of their responsibility. When we ask them their progress, we ask from somebody, not from the station. So that somebody understands that it's my duty to give the report and further assess if in that 10 months I had taken on board those. Because it's true. People, they see a multiply force rather than see students. So they see them as a multiply force. And I've always asked this thing. I don't know how many members they've seen the movie Training Day. I don't know how many members have seen the movie Training Day. The new recruit is gone on the field, is given to an officer. He trains him the wrong things all the time. He trains him how to extort people, how to hide drugs. He's an officer teaching a new recruit. And now if we don't assess, I am sure there are students that are taught wrong things out there. There are. Now, if you don't give them a chance of coming back for assessment and getting the report and mesh the report with your own assessment, they are not going to be able to save them. I think it will help us. So we wanted to send them back to their police stations because they would be better known there, and the people there will better have an access, both the students and the management. But we can take on board a designated, Madam Chair, these are newfound, these things we want to do. We can take on board a designated police station to say these are for that particular training. Maybe on the urban and on the rural, have those in the rural, have those in the city, so that we concentrate our monitoring and oversight on those to see how far do they go. I'm sure the team here can begin to take those things on rather than throwing them where they originally come from, but to throw them where we think it would be better returns when we go there. So that's we can look at it, Madam Chair. So the exact thing, I think, is not a big number of people that have gone out there. I think it's 24 people that we have dropped out of the, because we are not locking them in. But others, they will feel that they have no future if you stay 2 years without knowing if you are part of this organization. And then people begin to drop out. So we feel it's okay to make people part of organization quicker. But other thing was from the humanitarian side, Madam Chair. You know, something terrible happened. A student got hurt in one of our institutions. Because you are not in contract, you're supposed to go home. We invite you. The work you do is risky. This student got hurt in the gym, which is an obligation for any police training officer to do. And then you got hurt and we say to you, I walk a contract. Can you go home? It can't be so. It cannot be so. So that's why we need to put people in contract. If they're going to be part of this organization, do things they're supposed to do, benefits must be there and must be protected by the organization as they go forward. It was a big question. Unfortunately, this was the son of an officer. And as you raised in the ask, because to me it didn't ring that immediately somebody breaks the hip, so we say you can't be police, go home. So I got that and we sat down and said it can't be. We need to put some human element in the organization. We're not going to invite people here, they get hurt and we throw them out to the dust. There is no dustbin for human beings. So that's one thing, Madam Chair, that we lock them in the organization, and they themselves are protected when it comes to the benefits. Because if you get you we send you to the police station to be work, as you say, service, and they throw you all over, you chase the students that you buried, you buried at Mpumalanga, who was shot, I think someone in Pretoria. Yeah, but sure. Madam Chair, it does not fall within the police ambit looking after him and benefit. It cannot be. So that's one correction. So at least when they're in the college, Madam Chair, we can say they're still in the safer environment. But once you throw them at the station, catch it, catch them. Nobody separates that's what you've got two, you've got one. They see the police and they shoot. So people must be protected, Madam Chair. That goes with the overall development that we're trying to do. One thing on that score is that we have changed the police of the death grant in the South African police. First, the death grant would be those people that were killed in the line of duty, were shot. But there will be those that were killed because you were driving on duty, but you died on the car accident, so you did not get better benefits. So the police has changed everybody who dies, and the employee of this organization does get the death benefit. So that policy has changed, has come to being, Madam Chair. So that we do put the human element in the organization so that people, they find that this is our home. Madam Chair, there are many specific questions that were asked. I do love that the Philippi is specifically answered. Virgin Active were in discussion with Virgin Active. Looks like we'll be having the breakthrough that we'll see. South African police that joined there, they get a special, I think we're very close. They've been dealing with it. We'll get the special kind of terms rather than an ordinary person. But I must say, we're getting a lot of feedback of many South African police members joining gyms. I think it was last Friday or Thursday, I was in the gym, watching the active front lead, and six lady police, they came on their uniform to the gym, and they all, so it's a very good feedback that more and more police are joining the gym where they can, and then that's why we need to help and provide. So that is one of the partnerships, Madam Chair. Actually, not Virgin Active alone, but we're trying to deal with all gym houses because there are areas where there are other gym houses rather than, though Virgin Active is more spread than any others. So the students that fail will be answered. Training that we lose, have we started training detectives? That will be answered. What do we do with the detectives per se? Gymnasium and utilization is true. It does not follow that because you have a gym, people will go to gym. Actually, it's a tough thing with gym. People don't wake up in the morning. When the gym is there, it's a tough thing. Hence, we want to put mechanisms. One mechanism that we are putting with Virgin Active is to get all the list of our numbers, of our members, Madam Chair, that will gym there, and we get the monthly update if they go in the gym. You will understand that Virgin Active can tell whether you were at the gym in Kroonstad, whether you were in the gym in Bangin. So to get those printouts, especially if you get some specialties about it. And you must understand that those specialties are not yours, are for South African police. So you must go to the gym. So we have agreed that they will give us the monthly printout, and the member would be put in front of you. 2 weeks you did not go to the gym this time. So that's what we're trying to do, because many of us, it's only our cards that go to gym. People, they join, and cards, they gym. People per se, they don't go to gym. So it will help us to monitor that, Madam Chair. Criminal records, that is not Philippi alone. I have had these reports. Reports, Madam Chair. What we are trying to put on, our vetting system is slow. I think those structures are overwhelmed. There are many bodies that are not. There would be two near, basically, would be responsible for that kind of vetting. Then it will take long. What we're trying to do is to say, at least we must find the ways that all people that join, we do have their fingerprints checked. Because it will tell us if you have a record or not. That's before we get in understanding who are you. So that we don't take people that have... there are amazing stories about criminal people joining the South African police. I was told by the Lieutenant Kruger that one student was coordinating cash hides from the college. Literally. Until he was caught. So he would borrow her phone and my SIM card and go to the toilet and phone and coordinate his gangs around and come back and sit and listen to the lecture. Was found in the college. So it's one area that going through the communities, we're trying to tighten up, is a part of tightening up, Madam Chair, on that one. But ourselves, we have put that everybody will have to go to fingerprint before. So at least we've passed the first line of safety before you come to the college. So the Philippi story is not a new story. Commanders and stations, it starts from the top, Madam Chair. What do we do with people that are not performing on their positions? I think the first action is to try and train those people. I was throwing them in the docks. I was leaving them in the ledge that you are given this responsibility and nobody looks after you. That's that. But people, if they can't do it, so you change people. If people are really close, I don't know how easy it is, but you relieve people on their duties. There are quite several stations that should be performing well, but let me take Guamash. It's one of the best police stations that is here in South Africa. Guamash police station, the Nduzuma one, the new one. It's huge, about 125 cars, about 500 people, between 400 and 500 people. But Umashu, Madam Chair, has not changed to be the capital of murder. Has not changed. For the last 3 years, Umashu leads on murders, with the best police station in the country. So you need to look at it. Maybe that's why we have changed the police station commander now. We have a new one. That's that. There are quite several police stations. I think one is Bushbuck Ridge. Really will have to change the station commander. When you ask him, what did you do? He said, no, ask that one, meaning the clerk. These are the things that happen as you move around, Madam Chair. So that tells you that a station commander that wants an answer from a clerk in the police station is not supposed to be there. So these are the things that we'll be doing. Unfortunately, we can't do them en masse, Madam Chair. But as you find these gross things you will keep trying to train, to help, but to change at the end of the day, dealing with the commanders. The cleanliness, that cannot be anybody's responsibility with the exception of the occupant of that place. So if Philippi was not clean, South African police who use that and students and all administration, that is our responsibility. What is not our responsibility is the fixation of the maintenance of the building, because the building falls under public works. Once it's a provincial building, maintenance of the building per se belongs to public works. But the cleanliness and the bathroom that you talk, that is supposed to be somebody who occupies the building, which happens to be ourselves as the South African police. Then that's I'll end there, Madam Chair, and my colleagues will answer the rest of those that we are. Implementation question, Madam Chair, allow us to engage and indulge on it to see how do we take it going forward. Whether we can strike the balance between the developers and the implementers. For instance, we all agree that they must be trained before it happens. Can we do more? Let's check on that, Madam Chair. That is one area. As one area that we can go forward. Retraining will be explained. Indeed, we are trying. Is it adequate? I'm not sure about adequacy. But here we are. It will be explained. What will be adequate of the retraining can be assessed and all that kind of stuff. But if you ask me, what would you like is what we do, I think at the present moment will help us, but would not complete what we would have loved to see, Madam Chair. Because if we take warrant officers, it will take long. We take people out of their duty, and by the time you finish with this level, you have to go again. Take where you left. So it would be a rotation of more training than policy. So all those are the things that we have to look at. The last one is the recruitment and promotions. You see, Madam Chair, there are things that basically we need to change, and the budget speaks to them. Unfortunately, there will be forever one national commission of the South African police, and I hope and I think everybody would love to be. But unfortunately, it will be. We can increase deputies. There are four at the present moment, but we cannot make the organization of deputies. Cannot be. It cannot be the organization of divisional commissioners. Now, the promotion, as people go, it becomes lower and lower, and they reach the ceiling before they reach the ceiling, because that's how the organization is made. When we moved, first 6 days of my employment here, we discovered that in every hall, half of people that were station commissioners there were detectives. It's like taking the best maths and science teacher and make him or her principal of the school. And these scientists are not very good administrators. I don't think that detectives can make good administrators either. Now, why do you do this, guys? Because no way of progression without promotion. So, Madam Chair, we have agreed in the South African police to work the progression of packages rather than the progression of promotions. We are working on that. That we will say to the best detective, stay there. But now you're supposed to be captain, so your package must be captain while you are a warrant officer. So looks like many people agree with that. That as police, two things they love is a rank and their better package. Police, they love that. But they are prepared to sacrifice if they need to sacrifice on the rank and live with the progression of the package. It's one thing, Madam Chair, that has changed a huge exodus of the South African police as one came. That almost fortnightly and monthly, you will find between 15 and 20 people that were requesting to leave the organization. Until one time we called them, invited them, and we sat down. And they said, look, I'm captain for this time, and my package, if I'm captain for 15 years, I'm 15 years behind in my salary. And then we, that's where we thought of working on this, and I can assure you, nobody's leaving this organization, Madam Chair. Nobody. So we're working on it. It will need a budget, Madam Chair, a bigger budget to have a pay progression while people are there, but I think it's worth it. That to stay where you are, promote your package and work rather than promoting people per se. So that's one thing that we are looking at. We hope it will help us to keep our members happy and working and where they are most relevant, rather than them following the poly the promotion and opening the gap of the experience. Because that's another thing. These young people that come here, it will take them time to reach those experiences of good. I'm told that a good detective at least should have been running on the ground for 10 years. So now, those are the people that you promote, and you keep having the raw guys, having the raw people all the time, and our work of detectives then gets weaker. So we are trying to do. There are quite several things that we're trying to think around, Madam Chair, but as I said, we have not seated down and think. We think running curriculum, they'll speak to it. Is it extension of time, or is the time is the extension of value? So that I'm sure we'll be speaking to them. Thanks, Madam Chair.
You have up to 22 to respond to questions because members have follow up questions.
Chair, I think I'll call upon those that will respond. In terms of the first question was the driving, in terms of will these students or recruits be allowed to drive after they've been trained at the basic training academies? And the answer is if after the 24 months the person is found competent to drive, the person will of course be given a car to drive at the police station. In terms of the losses during probation, the National Commissioner have responded to that. We are having failures during our basic training. We do have failures. The numbers, we are having it available with us. We can give it to at a later stage. In terms of the detectives, the training program of our detectives the past 3-4 years have improved tremendously. In 2008, we invited the London Metropolitan Police to come and look at our detective program, and they told us, and that report is available, that our program compares very much favorably with theirs, and is even in some other respects is even better than theirs. Partnership with the Department of Education, I'm going to request General Bekela to respond to that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think in respect of the partnership with the Department of Education, realizing the quality of the students that we are getting,
we entered into a partnership of actually developing a qualification which is called National Certificate Vocational Safety in Society, whereby the learners are taught from a lower level in terms of the curriculum that involves policing, that has got policing subjects. But added to that qualification was also the requirement that the FET colleges, because it is presented by the FET colleges, that driving should also be part of that, because driving is a requirement in any case if people have got to apply to become part of the South African Police Service. So that is the partnership that we have done. The qualification, we have developed it collaboratively, because we found that the academic metric that is actually coming from the Department of Education serves very little purpose in terms of equipping the learners, especially when you go to subjects such as law, where they actually do not perform and do not understand. So they go through the qualification, which goes up to NQF level 4, not necessarily a metric, but an equivalent, which the Department of Education has subsequently, through the HISA, made it a requirement even when people want to do LLB at university. So I think that's the partnership that is there. Thank you.
Honorable Chairperson, in terms of the backlog of our personnel without driver's license, that figure is available. We are having is almost just over 3,000. And our plan was to finalize this backlog by the end of March 2012. But as the National Commissioner has alluded to the fact that there are plans in the pipeline to scrap the driver's license as a criteria, so that time frame as well as that number might increase. And that goes hand in glove in terms of what is going to happen to those students that are enlisted without driver's license and they are found not yet competent on the driver's license aspect. We're busy talking with the Divisional Commissioner of Personnel Services, that office, and we're hoping to deal with this. But because this will be a learning program on its own, we don't foresee any problem that someone would, after 24 months, not be declared competent. In terms of the Fed Corps and what the unions have...
It's possible. It is possible that a person may not have the driver's license on completion.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, what will happen? Because I think if you don't have anything to that effect, it's important that you think about it. What will happen? Will that person be declared completed the course or not, unless that person has a certificate? I think that is important. It's possible.
Thanks, Madam Chair and the General. In terms of the police members that are overweight, I really want to, Honorable Chairperson, bring to this House attention that the National Commissioner is in charge of this organization and not the unions. There's nothing that the unions have prescribed to us about that we should not touch these members who are overweight. There is a training program, the fitness program, that has been approved by the National Commissioner, in terms of which by the end of 2012, everybody would have been tested, everybody would have been in this fitness program. There is a team that is now working on a policy to say what will happen to this, and I'm hoping that they will report to the National Commissioner within as soon as possible. There is training program for the reservists and the Community Policing Forum members. That training program is available, and we can make it available at any time. In terms of the new basic training learning program, what has changed, I'm going to ask that Brigadier Gosman, very much briefly, is the developer, the one leading the team, very much briefly to enlighten the House in terms of exactly what has changed, what have we added, and so forth.
Thank you very much. I'm going to briefly afterwards.
Does the Chair have, if you'd like to come?
All right.
Yes.
Madam Chair, when we reviewed the program, it was informed by various reports as a start-up. And we looked at four things, how we can improve on quality in the program. The first one is look at the model, and I think the model was quite elaborated this morning by the National Commission in terms of how can we improve quality, taking the students for 10 months in a college and then 12 months into field training and then bring them back for assessment those. That was a model that we looked at very much and recommended to the management. The second one we looked at was the methodology of training. Now, I must say to you that the current program is very, very much packed, and we had to look at the methodology in terms of how do we bring the message across to the learner in such a way that when he leaves the college, he understands what policing is all about. And what we did there was we packed the new program with scenarios. We brought practical examples to the classroom, which was there before, but not as much as we tried to give the police officer also a broader spectrum of policing by changing the methodology. We looked at the content very much. The content we looked at was. I can just briefly go through him. I think the National Commission touched on it this morning also in terms of patriotism, bringing the sense of pride back to police officers, the new rank structure and discipline that goes with that too. We did some homework also with regard to the drill of members, bringing the posture back, and we asked for the assistance of also the SANDF, and they helped us also a lot. And then we looked very much at corruption and professional conduct of members. That we brought into the first learning area of orientation to SAPS. The second one, a learning area we looked at was law. We looked at very critical piece of legislation that was passed recently, the Child Justice Act we looked at. We included the Sexual Offences Act. We included the Road Traffic Act. And then also we looked for the latest prescribed book of applied law for policing, which is very, very much practical, which aligns very much also with the methodology that we use in the classroom now. Now, I must say law is a very monotonous subject because law is law. But what we're trying to do here is to make it as practical as possible, pack it with practical examples and scenarios and role plays in the class to make it more effective so that the learner understands that learning area very well. The third learning area, Madam Chair, is the heart of policing, community policing, community service centre. We had a look at all the contents of the forms once again that are being used in the community service centre. We included communication as a new model in that or new chapter in the model. Docket processing, that was not there before. We looked at that again, and we included it also in that model again. The fourth learning area was crime investigation. We give the learner here a sense of introduction to become like to know what a detective work about. We've looked at new content there, investigative interviewing. We looked very seriously at that. We also look at the management of exhibits, the role of crime intelligence. I think there was this morning, it was also right, the URL issue. The investigation of missing persons, I think, which is currently taking place in our country very much, and the victim empowerment, and then the role of informers. We included all those under that learning area. In learning Area 5, which is crime prevention, what we added to the current learning material, Madam Chair, was patrols, roadblocks, situational crime prevention, and then very important, which is quite a new topic,
since the beginning of last year was school-based crime prevention that we included in the training package. Then the last learning area is street survival. Now, Madam Chair, I need to be cautious because I don't want to bring the house under the impression we never did physical fitness. We did. But we increased it because of the priority set by the National Commissioner. Physical fitness is increased in this learning area. We've added survival principles, which was never before included. We look at advanced tactical shooting and then first aid, which is very important to the SEPs. Those are basically the changes we made in the content, Madam Chair. Then last but not least, we looked at, I think the concern was raised by you this morning, how do we integrate all this knowledge? The team sat very much and looked at how can we integrate the various phases, which is the first phase, foundational phase, into the second phase, which is the practical phase, and then the last phase, which is your field training phase. And what we tried, we did not even integrate the qualification as such. What we did was we brought it right down, the integration from fundamental knowledge, in other words, law. How do we integrate law into a practical scenario in a role play in the classroom, taking it back to the world, to the workplace, and experience it practically there, and then later on come back to the college once again for assessment and see whether the practice has been installed in the organization as such. So we look very much at integration. In the first part, we look very much at referencing that. In other words, if we talk about law, we just don't talk about law. We really bring specific crimes in and try to bring it across so that the learner can see how does the definition of a crime fit into a real situation. So we try to integrate that from the foundational phase up to the field training phase. Those are the four basic things we looked at when we revised the program, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thanks, Prahadia Gosman. The last one, Honorable Chairperson, it was on the quality control in terms of is there a standard examination paper for all the academies? There is a standard question papers. All the question papers are being set at our head office by Major General Mbekela. Unfortunately, due to time constraints, I will not give the floor to elaborate. But all the questions are set, and then they are being couriered to the different academies where they are opened on the day of the examination. In terms of what percentage of passing are we having, I'm not having it with you, but like I've said, that there are failures. There are failures, so it is not 100% pass rate. It was in the region of about 90%. General Yalongo, are you having the exact number of pass rate?
Madam Chair, actually, I don't have the number, but I can say that our passing rate amounts to 95% in all the institutions, because you can find out the intake, the total withdrawal due to non-performance, you find out that we withdraw about 10 to 15 trainees. So it's not a huge number of trainees that we withdraw.
Apologies, Chair. The question that I asked was, what is the percentage pass? In other words, is 50%? Is this something you have to get 50%? That is actually the question. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I think that we have responded to all the questions.
Except Philippe. Except those of us who went to Philippe.
Madam Chair, I'm Major General Nyalungu, who is in charge of all the 10 basic training institutions. In respect of Philippi, after I received the report from General Beck, I personally went to Philippi myself and do the inspection in respect of all those issues which were mentioned in the report of Major General Berger, as well as my own finding when I was visiting the institution itself. And from there, I said to the commander, and from there, I drafted a plan of which we going to address all those issues. And I gave you a due date to say all those issues must be finalized by the end of October. But to emphasize to also to almost of some of those issues, like the thinness of the environment, the instructions is that the commander must ensure that the environment is clean. There are many ways on which the commander can get his or environment clean in any training institution. There are labor that are employed in the institution that must be utilized to see to it that the environment is clean, cut grass, we supply them with the machinery responsible for doing that. And also the other instruction is that, which is also for assistance to the commander in ensuring that the environment is clean, is that during weekends, when these trainees are not doing anything, we don't actually make them hard labors, but we are saying, instead of them loitering around the institution early in the morning, only for 3 hours, they must assist in picking the papers around the whole institution so that the institution cannot have a lot of papers running around, because always their argument in those areas is that there is blowing of winds and whatsoever. But that doesn't mean that we can leave the papers around. So there is no any point on which the commander can tell me to say can't maintain the institution. The trainees can be utilized during the weekends. They are laborers. We supply them with all the equipment that are necessary for keeping the environment clean. The other issues which I picked up was that the commander hasn't yet attended the middle management course, of which last week I talked with the Brigadier Nyalunga, who is in charge of management leadership, to say as the next level step, I need you to put her in the middle management course in order to jack up her management skill. And
but if I may just come in, how do you make a person who's not undergone at least the middle management course a rector of a college? How do you do it in the first place? How does it happen in the first place? Let alone the challenges that you then meet later on. But how do you even begin to think, let alone doing it? How does it happen?
I don't Chairperson, I also see, I don't understand. He's answering the question which he says he visited. My question that now that he visited, when last did he visit before his visit? When I'm saying when last he, I'm not meaning him, let's say I'm meaning anybody delegated by him. When last, before, because this visit was prompted by the visit of the portfolio committee, before this, when last did he visit that place? Because he seems to be discovering a lot of things which are not happening.
I agree with Mr. George, because part of the problem is, and I mean it's shocking to hear that the commander of that training college hasn't done that training. And as I said, that same commander was there 2-3 years ago. It was the same commander. And the same problems were there. But the fact of the matter is, and I think that is where we also need to give acknowledgement where acknowledgement is due. At least something is done about it now. But Commissioner General Tele, the fact of the matter is your senior management, the previous time, did nothing about it. They did absolutely nothing about it. It was reported to them. In fact, we were refused entry into that college. We had to phone Commissioner Petros to tell the commander to let us in the previous time that we were there. We were refused entry. But your people sitting there who were in those positions did nothing about that. They got that report. And I think that is where this committee's issue about
responsibility for senior managers comes in as well, Jefferson. You can't just be a senior manager in name and not act upon problems that are there. You can't sit in an ivory tower, whether it is in Wachthuis or whether it's at the provincial office, and not act when there are problems, or wait for this committee to discover the problems. It's after all not our work to do so.
Yeah. Chair, I think this is the crux of many of the problems within SEPs. I know that I had a question and I commented on the 3rd of March 2008, where the minister at the time told us that out of, at that stage, 1,124 police stations, only 73% had station commissioners who'd actually completed communication, 14% had finished management and leadership, and 58% completed planning and management of operations. So there was not, there were a mere handful of heads of stations who were actually qualified to run a station. And that was the actual crux of so many of the problems. People were put into the positions who never completed any training. And when we find out now that the disaster stations that we come across are run by people who have no training, I want to know who's putting them in this position? Who's promoting people to positions where they are supposed to be running a station effectively, and they don't have even the most basic of qualifications to be in that position? Somebody here has got to be taking those decisions. And I don't know why you would do that. Why would you put someone in a job if they weren't trained to do that job? Because you're setting them up for failure, and you're setting the station up for failure, and as a result, the surrounding community has got no hope at all of having any sort of a relationship with the SAPs.
Maybe they looked at the question. You only have 10 colleges. Just 10. You know. I mean, basic. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You have 10 basic colleges, and to visit them will take you 2 weeks, and you visit at all of them a day, and you do what we have done, or better than. We're not specialists in that way, remember? So you can do better than ourselves. But why? Why are you not doing it?
Madam Chair, the visiting of the institution, actually, I'm doing it. But I think my problem may be that I informed them to say I'm coming. I think that might be one of the problems that I'm doing, because when I visit them, I will check and I find that everything is in an acceptable standard. But the issue of having appointed her as a commander there without the management leadership program was that during the moment she was appointed as a commander, that was not put forward as a requirement. And at a later stage, all the commanders have undergone their management leadership while they are in commission, and we'll put them in schedule, and now she's the one now that will be attending at the later stage, that management leadership. And if, according to what I've discovered, I want her to say, if there can't be any improvement in terms of that, and then I'll report to the division to say either we exchange her or we remove her from that position. But at least at the moment, I need also to play my role without also defending myself. And I will also try maybe to go and stay with her there for 2 days and 3 days in Philippi to see that things are improved. Because some of these issues which were raised here, according to me, is just a part of negligence. I mean, the environment not clean, not using the equipment that are there, presenters not doing according to the expectation in the classes is something that if the commander is hands-on can be able to ensure that there is proper presentation and there's proper attendance in the class itself. So all those I admit is just negligence on the part. At the moment, I'm also acting as the commander of Pretoria College. I know exactly to say if you are not hands-on on issues, you can't get things right. Unless if you always visit the class and look, and if you ask to the people where is your presenter's guide, where is your preparation. You find that some of the people don't have, not that they don't know, but because of, they know that there is no supervision and everything. So it's what I've discovered in Philippi, to say supervision is not there. A commander is staying aside, only dealing with the management personnel or getting information from the management, which actually are untrue, and which ultimately should also feed me with those type of information, coming to believe to say things are going right while they're not going right. Thank you, madam.
Yeah. I wish you could join us when we visit this institution, announced or not announced. If you are not doing it every day, we pick it up. If you do it because you're preparing for the portfolio committee that is coming, we do pick it up. There is no way about it. So you survive even only if you are doing it as a way of life in your police station or college. Because if you're doing it because the portfolio committee is coming, we tell you, we discover it. We discover it. That you are saying you make announcements, you inform people, you communicate things that come from head office every day during, what is this, marches in the morning. Is it marches, what is it called? Parades in the morning. We discover that you are not doing it, you are lying to us, because we go to people we are not expecting, we call them. What did they tell you this morning? And they say nothing. Was there a parade this morning? There's nothing. But they're on the walls and everything, it's there on the walls. So we discover these things. and it is also very true that in Chatsworth, good as many of their things, they are doing them correctly. But we're also able to find some weaknesses. It was an announced visit. And Gamashu Police Station, for instance, they're not going to change because they are members of parliament and provincial leadership of SAPS. Well, they are used, they are not demonstrating this one. Standing like this. Police.
Yeah.
Like this. When we are there, a number of them, we are few here, standing like that. There's provincial leadership of SAPS. The members of parliament, it is known, but because they're doing it every day, then you'll not be surprised that this is the capital of murder. There may be hundreds of them, because there are so many of them, but they are not doing it. They're not going to change on the day when we are there. They'll continue to do it. They'll bust there, outside, on the side, because that is what they're doing every day. So the point I'm trying to make is, if on the day that you go there and it's an announced visit, you can't pick up these weaknesses, please check your strategy that you use. Could be that you listen to what they are saying. We don't. Commissioner, we don't sit in the meeting like this. It will be 10, 20 minutes. We are out. We go to the area. We go to areas and we say, show us the DVA register. Then they show us the chaos that is there. The DVA register, where they only record these cases, the rest they go elsewhere. And they give you explanation. But that tells you that even the statistics on DVA is therefore wrong, because it's recorded somewhere. We go there, we see these things. We don't sit in the room in the boardrooms. No, we don't. And that is why we pick up these things. The reasons why I can tell you that the curriculum does not talk to the timetable. It does not talk to the attendance register, because we ask for those things. And remember, I'm not a teacher by profession. And for that matter, we don't have today a tool, a questionnaire, like we do for visiting police stations. But you ask for them. You have said you have 40 credits. Show me on your timetable that 40 credits. But show me on your attendance register that 40 credits where you have recorded. It's not there. It's not there. Sometimes you actually count 20. And what does that mean? And this person has completed training without meeting the requirements of the curriculum. You ask for these files, lesson plan files, and questionnaires and memorandum, and they will not be forthcoming. So we're saying it on the basis of what we see, not what we hear. Because that is a big difference. You sit and listen,
you don't get the right thing. Go and see it for yourself. And that is what officials know we do. When people come from head office, they know that they're going to sit in meetings like this and they're going to say whatever, the good things that do not exist. And off we go, things are right. When there are bathrooms that are dirty, simple things, dirty bathroom, you never go to the bathroom, we go. No, we rarely do go. And that is why we discovered these things. Otherwise, from what the members had said, they were told that they had checked those bathrooms. They went to the bathrooms that had been checked, they found them dead. Who is telling the truth? Is it a dirty bathroom or somebody who's telling me that he's checked the bathroom? These are the things. So if you're going there, they said, even if it is an announced visit, and you meet with them in the boardroom and you get report and you say thank you very much and off you go, you've not done what you're supposed to do.
Chair, I just wanted to raise a point, if I may. You know, many, many years ago, unfortunately, I had to do national service. And, you know, when I was doing basic training, we used to have to get up at 3-4 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. And you had an inspection at about 5:30. And your corporals in the military would come in. And they would check, they'd get onto the helmets. They would check for dust up there. They would check for dust on the lights. Now, the issue is, it wasn't a lesson on how to clean things. It was a lesson on how to be disciplined.
Yeah.
Now, Brigadier here also raised the fact about ranks and discipline. But I want to say something that I firmly believe, unless you can't get the basics right, you're not going to get the bigger things right. And that discipline that was instilled in us, you knew that, you know, if you were told do this, you jumped. And you asked how high must I jump as well. But the general, you were saying you've been there to that college before and so on. But I can tell you now, even if you'd gone there on an unannounced visit, those things were so badly wrong in that place, I don't think they would have been corrected. Therefore, I have to ask the question as to, when you go and visit the college, you probably find, as is the case elsewhere, you find that they will only show you the good stuff.
Yeah.
They don't show you the bad stuff. And so I'm just raising a point that I really think it's back to basics and to instill discipline, because if you can't be disciplined in the small things, those recruits are not going to be disciplined in the bigger things. Thanks, Chair.
No, thank you, National Commissioner. I think you want to respond, but I think I will request you to respond to this one. I want to close, but I think I want to ask this question. National Commissioner, we asked lecturers in both these colleges. You have lecturers who are constables. They are the level of a constable. So they are training these trainees. Just after a year, they become their colleagues because they are sharing the level or the rank. And it would seem like there isn't a clear career pathing for lecturers. And my question is, how does it affect that you have in the first place a constable being a lecturer? But why do you allow a situation where there isn't an entry level for lecturers so that you get the best as lecturers? I'm saying quite a number of them, Chatsworth in particular, because they raised this issue. They were actually saying this is a constable. And they are training student constables. 6 months down the line, they are their colleagues, same rank, same everything. How does it happen?
Surely they will answer. Again, Madam Chair, before I come to these are societal issues sometimes. That's why matrix teach matrix. No, there are societal things. It's true, there are matrix. I'm told there is a province that has got about 30,000 matriculants teaching in schools, including matrics. But on this one, it would be maybe the basic question you are asking here is an entry policies. For instance, we'll find that he's a constable and he's got a degree in law. See? He's a constable, but he's got a degree in law. Now, you'll teach law because you've got a degree, but the police, they say you are constable here. So there is a problem there that you are not working the relationship of what you have achieved vis-a-vis this organization and the honor it puts on you. Because I don't agree, Madam Chair, that a person who's got a degree must be a constable. That's that. Actually, one thing that you are doing, the special task force people, they have special task force people. They have intense training, Madam Chair. I don't know if you have been once or at Tabazimbi. If not, we'll have to invite you and see what happens, Madam Chair. Those are not people; those are human machines. So. Human machines. They are just not human beings. And they climb your 14-floor store on bare hands. So we are simply saying they can't just be there after all that because of us. So they need to start somewhere. So maybe those are the levels. I think at the PSS, Protection Services, there are two professional physical trainers. They are constables. They're professional. We took them from virginity. They've got diploma in physical training. So if you find them college training, then they will be constables, but they've got diploma in physical training. So I think, I'm not saying all of them will be that, but we do need to fix our structure on the particular thing. But some of them, they would have other those that teach law, they would be lawyers, constables, those that physical training would be physical training diplomas, but constables. So that's how it goes. I think we do need to correct our own structure, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, there was one question of the PSS and our behavior. The protection service and the people that guard the buildings and houses. You know, one thing that you are caught in is a force and service mentality. That's one area. I hear that people want to militarize and all that. As you speak of service, Honorable Member, you are speaking of the army. I dial it up. Nobody urges you and begs you to do things. As you go to the army, Madam Chair, those that they went for the army, they will know that the first theory you are taught there is that you ceased to be yourself. In any military institution and structure, you cease to be yourself because you follow laws to the latter. Now, we have moved from force. We are caught in between whether we are force or a service. Service is a service, Madam Chair. And that's how people will behave, like as a service. And that's one area that at one time we have to fight. By the way, we have not moved to the South African Police Force. The minister, not Pele again, who has got a prerogative, a legislative prerogative to deal with the ranks, has dealt with the ranks, but not with the force as a service. We remain service, Madam Chair. So that's how people will behave. We need to work on discipline vis-a-vis the equal responsibility of that. I fully agree. Our members sometimes behave in a way just you want to be embarrassed. The way they sleep. They literally sleep. I've seen them sleeping because sometimes I've seen them sleeping while I stay. They sleep. I was picking a Sunday paper issue. So I was picking up
a paper at about after I'd come from the gym. So I had to knock for them to open me the gate. I'm from the gym already. So that happens. But there are other issues. You remember that we have several people that came from the army that joined our static guard. They came from the army. And those people were not per se trained for that particular duty. I don't say that those are. So we have to look at it. We have to work at it. But the last one, Madam Chair, without defending them, some of them are abused by their principals. They are. They are sent to go and buy sweets for kids. Some of them, they are. And it's not their job, Madam Chair, to take the bags after the shopping and groceries and put them in the house. Many of them, they'll come and complain that they were driving, they are going home in the afternoon, but they're instructed to put the blue lights. So these are the things that they will happen. And they'll push. I've seen them pushing a trolley in doing groceries. I don't think it's an issue of a member to push the trolley. So we do have to get the way from the principals to help us on those matters, to be allowed to do jobs that are there. Honourable member, Liz says it's not their job to tell us. We are not going to be offended if you find these things and tell us it. And ours is to respond and try to correct them. But you are not going to be offended. Thanks.
How are you going to evaluate this curriculum? How have you planned to evaluate this curriculum?
Madam Chair, I think we have got two levels in terms of, you know, of the curriculum. I think we have indicated, for instance, that we are conducting impact studies, which we will continue to implement, because even the review of this particular one was informed by the impact studies. In other words, to check the effectiveness of the program, there. And based on the responses that we received, we had to respond, to that. But I think also at institutional level, we have got what is called monitoring and evaluation, the teams that are there. And those people that are doing the M&E in the institutions, what they do, they are learner reaction forms that are also there. So that whenever learners are going through the program, they also react. They don't only react to the curriculum, they react to the curriculum, including the assessments as well, how effective assessments are. And then that information, together with the information that is coming from the other participants, like the lecturers, is consolidated in the form of a report, and then it comes to us. But besides that, we also, in other words, we say there's an internal leg of monitoring and evaluation, which is part of quality assurance, which is done by the institution. But there's also the external leg that is done by Shobek, which is the head office, for the quality assurance team to also, visit the institutions in order to check the curriculum as it is being implemented, methodologies and all. The content, methodologies, and all. But the third leg that is also, that also assists in the evaluation of the curriculum, and which we are going to strengthen, because we need to strengthen all these levels, because obviously the levels have not been functioning effectively based on the report that is coming from the impact studies. The third level is what is usually done by the CETAs that are actually charged with the duty of quality assurance in as far as program implementation is concerned. So what we intend doing is revisiting and sitting down and looking at the pitfalls that have been there in the monitoring and evaluation, which we have already identified. The people that are doing M&E are not really qualified, or they do not understand in reality what they are actually supposed to do I mean, actually including all the levels. So that is what we are checking up. And it is telling with the trainers or the lecturers that, I mean, that you're talking about, that we are currently now looking at even the criteria that we need to put in place in order, I mean, for the selection of the right people for the right job at the right time. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. And you're not going to get them if they will be constables. I wouldn't be attracted to being a lecturer when I will be a constable. If you were to say I will be a lecturer and you put something attractive, because I definitely must have something else, a qualification that makes me a lecturer, then I would probably be attracted. But for now, with my qualification, with my degree maybe, or with the training, the specialized training that you offer to me, but I still become a constable and train constable trainees, I would definitely not be attracted. So I think it's something that you need to look into, because it's a common problem for all these professions that are trained in this session. It's police, and therefore the focus is crime fighting, prevention, and so on, and the training is a by the way thing. It's nursing, and focus is patient care, and training is a by the way thing, particularly at the level, at the hospital level. So they always get eroded. I'm not their shop steward, but I think it's important that they are recognized. You don't become a lecturer out of being a police. Yes, you must be a police first, but there is something extra that you must have, and that must be recognized, and it must attract you so that you are motivated to do your work.
I think, as I was indicating, that's exactly the focus that we are now taking, looking at the requirements. What are the requirements for somebody to be able to deliver training at a certain level? That's why we are establishing an internal registration body to actually start now looking at the categorization. And they are not only talking to the academic qualifications. They talk to the academic qualifications, professional qualifications, as well as the experience. Because, I mean, those three, the tripartite, they actually constitute the core in terms of somebody who can be there. So it's development now that we're looking at.
Yeah, I allowed you to speak because I'm disciplined. Otherwise, I'm closing. So, yes, indeed, that's what I'm saying. A national commissioner, I know of a professor called Mr. Brockwell. Surely you will know Mr. Grant Thompson. You will know Mr. Mhokong. He's a Dutsa writer. Mhokong, Mr. Grant Thompson is the head of KZN, he was there, but he was a professor for medical school in KZN. They teach doctors in class, but they go to clinical facilities where they supervise what they are doing, so that there is an integration of theory and practice. My own view will not be to say people who are in your colleges must go and teach, but I can't understand as to why should they not from time to time visit their students where they are. I can't understand. When they are not at college, I don't understand as to what then do they do every day. For instance, if now there isn't any group, all your groups are in the clinical facilities, what are they doing at school? Why can't they from time to time visit them? Because National Commissioner, we asked for their workbook that they use in the clinical facilities. They do not have them, they don't know them. This talks to integration of theory and practice. It's too separate. It can be integrated. It can be made
better. And I'm saying this understanding exactly that you have said there will be these 2 months before they complete. But that might also be too late. That might also be too late. This is a clinical cause than it being too much of a theory cause. There is a need for the integration of theory and practice, and also included in that will definitely be the identification of police stations that are suitable for training. I can imagine, if, like you've indicated, National Commissioner, that it could be some in the rural areas and others in the urban area, and probably a principle that says somebody will be there 5 months in an urban police station, but also must taste a rural police station, so that when they complete, you know, they have the taste of the two. Unlike a person who is forever in KZN Mahlabatini, and on completion he wants to go and work in Johannesburg Central Hospital, police station, and he becomes so useless because he has no clue as to what is happening there. But if he has had it is, I think we can improve this training and make it even more better. And let me appreciate the fact that you have done this work. And for me, we can take it forward. And for me, this is an opportunity where if we talk the evaluation of a curriculum, we can do it effectively. Because you have a completely new curriculum that you're going to implement. And you're going to have new people that will undergo the training under this new curriculum. And therefore, in fact, the curriculum is evaluated as it is being developed. It is evaluated as it is being implemented. It is evaluated after it has been implemented. And therefore, we can actually follow these steps properly up to the end, that when they complete, we are able to have what is called a tentative, so to say, things that we can say about the curriculum. To say we think it's weak here, we think it is strong here, we think it needs this improvement, because we are continuously evaluating it as we are implementing it. But please understand that it is somebody who has no understanding of these things she's talking about. The last thing I want to say, National Commissioner, which you raised, and I think it will be important for us all to think about and think about clearly, is the issue of indemnity during training, particularly when there is a clinical facility. That is what you have said, and you said it, but I could not pick up exactly as to how then do you hope to indemnify them. Because they can actually, okay, when they are sued, the department comes into being. But also they are exposed to danger and so on and so forth. Then therefore they definitely need some indemnity, which I don't know how it can be done. But it's something that I think you already indicated you are busy looking into. We will call you back on this one. We really have interest in the training of police. Whether it is detective, like I've said, post-basic training, but we have interest in the basic training. We believe that we have it right there, we'll have it right. We lose it there, we'll lose it. Many people who are here, when they speak, they will always refer to what they were taught at basic level. Because this is what you learn best, and this is what remains with you for the rest of your life. The emphasis that was put in me during my training, that of accountability, responsibility for my own acts, omissions, and commissions, it lives with me not only when I do my work, but even when I'm at home, when I cook, when I do everything, that I'm responsible for this which I'm doing and I'm accountable for it. If I've omitted anything, if I've committed myself, if I've actioned anything, I'm responsible for that. This is what I was taught at basic level. It lives with you throughout. You miss it at that stage, you've missed the point. I want to thank you very much for this, I think, very important and fruitful meeting. We're talking to intellectuals and academicians here. You could hear the language when they speak that now. it goes up and up, and I think the members are able to deal with this thing. Thank you very much for the meeting. When I started with the meeting, I apologized to media for not informing you on Friday that the meeting is postponed to today. Some of you were not here at the time, but we have indeed apologized. Thank you very much. This meeting is closed. Thank you.